Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Then still got a little air under my feet, still feeling the thrill of victory, and Lord knows I hope the Repiglican Party is still suffering the complete and crushing utter agony of defeat. I'm trying not to gloat too hard, but the fact of the matter is they're still there, they're not going away, and it remains our job to battle them, to fight them. Most particularly, in this instance, the thing that keeps staying on my mind is the apparent dichotomy between the fact that Barack Obama won Florida and Barack Obama won California, and yet both states institutionalized bigotry on the same ballot. Dig that. Let that rattle around in your heads for a little bit. That's nuts. And it shows the pervasive depth of wickedness and evil that just suffuses through the religion industry in this country. They could literally use their tax-exempt status to advocate murder, which in many, frankly, is what they did in California. And it's what they do every time some religion industry freak. No, this is not a rehash of prayer meeting. But every time some religion industry freak says, we got to protect marriage between one man and one woman. Every time they do that, every blessed time, and when they come in, well, they're going to take away our First Amendment rights, Sergeant Carter. If they say we can't do the hate speaking. Every time they do that, they say that it's okay by them. For young men and young women, mostly young men, to be beaten within an inch of their life and left to die in an alley or a field or crucified on a barbed wire fence. That's all right with the followers of Christ. Which, of course, they aren't, but claim to be. And I'm sick with it. I am absolutely sick with it. I mentioned something in a conversation last night. I believe I was talking with Sandra. It was the Halloween edition of the Ellen DeGeneres Show, and Wanda Sykes was there, and she put it because the biggest dichotomy out of this is, or the most sickening part of this, is that the African-American church that gave sanctuary and haven and birth to Martin Luther King was leveraged to deny constitutional rights to a group of people who are as put upon in some ways as any other group has been in the history of this country. Statistically, in terms of the polling data, only atheists in America are hated more than gay people. But this is damn cute and darn funny. But this little clip from Wanda Sykes has more truth in it than a lot of people, especially those who supported Proposition Hate in California, are capable of comprehending.
paying attention to all the politics, all the propositions,
all
everything.
Yeah, man. You know, and here in California, the one that's important to me is Prop 8. And, you know. And what broke my heart, you know, I'm watching the news and there were, you know, like a lot of the black churches got together and they were rallying, you know, they're for Prop 8. I'm like, come on, it's discrimination. I mean, discrimination is discrimination. And of all people, black people should know.
Yeah.
Discrimination. And you going to vote to get discrimination in the Constitution?
That's, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
I know, African Americans, you know, they get upset. It's like, wait, black and gay, that's totally different things. Oh, you know, we had it hard. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I'm black. I know. I get it. You know, but there's things that gay people have to go through that black people didn't have to go through. Mm-hmm. I never had to come out black.
No.
never had to sit my family down and tell them about my blackness. Have a little talk with my employer. Let them know about my black lifestyle.
Oh, yeah.
Mom, Dad, I got to tell you something. Hope you still love me. I'm black. You know, and then my mother, like, oh, not black, Lord. Anything but black, Jesus. Anything but black. What did I do? It was Soul Train. Well, I shouldn't have let you watch Soul Train. I just feel like, I mean, that's just me. I was born black. Oh, you weren't born black. The Bible says Adam and Eve. It doesn't say Adam and Mary J. Blige.
I laughed myself silly the first time I saw that. But how many truths are embodied in there? By my count, a whole bunch. And I haven't seen all the numbers, so I could be entirely wrong. But just looking at it as it stands, it would appear that there were a whole bunch of people, black and white, Latino, Asian, who went into polling places in California and said, yeah, we're going to have some change, and marked or touchscreened or what the hell ever Barack Obama's name, and then went down and said, for everybody but the queers, no, yeah, on a, oh, got to protect the marriage. Daggum. What kind of disconnect is going on in the mind of somebody who can do that? By a ballot proposition in the state of California, a bare majority of the people have stated that they wish to institutionalize bigotry and prejudice and fear and hate, and at the end of the day, say to a large segment of the population, you're not as American as we are. You're not as Californian as we are. And I got to tell you, I got nothing for them. That just pisses me off to the ends of my toenails. You know, in his acceptance speech, Barack Obama included gay folk in his whole sort of coming together homily. Black and white, Asian and Latino, male and female, old and young, gay and straight. Don't think the atheists got a mention in there, but you can only ask for so much. Will this be taken care of by federal legislation? Is this just a wait another day Was it Langston Hughes who talked about the dream deferred? We'll defer it until we get a majority on the Supreme Court. So all the gay community. And no, damn it. Here I am, straight, raising a ruckus about this. Because I recognize, and the straight, the bi, the gay members of the audience that listen to this program understand, that this isn't a gay issue. This isn't a straight issue. Jesus, this is a constitutional issue. The Constitution of the United States is either the Constitution of the United States for all of us, or baby, it is the Constitution for none of us. And it's just that easy. So, you know, Souter may retire from the court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg may retire from the court. John Paul Stevens, 88 years old, has been hanging on for dear life till he could retire from the court. So that's three. But that's three liberals. That's three of the so-called liberals on the court. And that still leaves a relatively young John Roberts, a relatively young Sammy Alito, and Slappy Thomas and Scalia sitting there making up the core of the just the weird, twisted, sick right wing of the part of the court. And they are going to hang on like grim death until they hope another fascist enters the White House so they can retire. I think back to that story recounted. Oh, maybe it was in one of the Woodward and Burns, the Woodward and Bernstein book on the Burger Court. Or maybe it's just an anecdote. I can't recall at this point. But the story of Thurgood Marshall, who had some profound health problems and was hospitalized during the Nixon administration. And, you know, Richard Nixon, who had the subtlety of a cactus, kept sending a Secret Service agent around to just sort of see how old Thurgood was hanging in there. He finally, one day, Thurgood called the man over, got him a piece of paper and a pencil, and wrote down a little note, folded it up, and said, "Take it to the president." Richard Nixon opened it up, and Thurgood Marshall had written, "Not yet." So a segment of America has to wait until one of those hateful old bastards, Alito or the Slappy Thomas or the fat Tony Scalia or the John Whitebread Roberts, one of those has to die before the civil rights of an entire segment of the population is acknowledged. Wow. That requires of me a tolerance for a level of Machiavellian politics and political cynicism that I just can't stomach. Can't do it. Now, it's encouraging. The ACLU, among others, has already filed a lawsuit hoping to get this constitutional, this proposition hate thing, this piece of political, the bigotry-driven filth thrown out on its ear like it surely must deserve to be. But that's a court challenge. There's no guarantee in that. So where does that leave people in California? Waiting on the courts. Because the proposition system in California allows multi-million dollar driven hate campaigns to infuse its political process. Jesus. The state of California has institutionalized bigotry. Maybe we haven't fit that. That's too much for a bumper sticker, isn't it? I guess it would cost people their jobs, and it's a damn shame. But, you know, it's one of those moral things. And frankly, I would love to see, a movement spring up in California where people simply asked patrons, say, at a restaurant, how did you vote on 8? And if they said yes, then have the server just walk away from them. I'm sorry, I can't accommodate you here. Adopt some of the tactics of the civil rights movement in reverse. Why should someone be obliged to, through their employment, to serve another human being who made a special trip to the polling place just to show the world how much they hate another individual? Screw that. Oh, what's that? What's that, ma'am? You want to order flowers for your mother's funeral? How did you vote on 8, ma'am? Oh, you voted for it? Get the hell out of my shop. I won't serve you. If they want to inject bigotry and discrimination into the state of California, then by God, hand it back to them. You know, there was a Google, Apple. You know, there's a, I mentioned restaurants and florist shops, but hell, we know, I know. And I apologize if that sounds stereotypical, because I just realized that it probably did, and I'm sort of ashamed of myself. How about this? You go in for an oil change. How did you vote on 8? I voted yes. Get your damn car out of here. I don't care if it locks up and throws a rod on the freeway at 85 miles an hour. Get out! And Mormons? Mormons? We haven't been visited by any Mormons in a long time, and I'm kind of hoping that we do. There's just not a lot of them around here, but I need me one of them Mormon missionaries about now. Because honest to Jesus, I'm at a place where if I saw a couple of them bicycle-riding little freaks in my driveway or on my porch, I'd wait till they got on the porch and come out the door with a ball bat. I'm serious. Pumping all those millions of donor dollars, the charity that they receive from their members, and to turn it around in the state of California, and same goes for the Roman Catholic Church. Only they don't ride bicycles and show up on you. No. Use all that tax-free money to literally institutionalize hate and bigotry in one of the several states of this nation? No. No. No, no. And, you know, who the hell am I to tell anybody anything? But seriously. Because Proposition Hate, well, it was damn close, and that means there were an awful lot of straight people voting against it as well as gay folk. And it's time to turn the heat up a little notch on these bigots. I'd like to buy some gas. How'd you vote on 8? Oh, I voted for it. Get out! No gas for you! Sitting in the, standing in the line at the grocery store. How'd you vote on 8? Oh, I voted for it. Get out! No groceries for you! Liquor stores. Grocery stores. This is going to have to be pushed into the public consciousness. Otherwise, the same forces that did this number on human rights in California will find something else that they don't like. And the Mormons and the Catholics in an unholy, twisted alliance will get in bed together again. What's next? a proposition to, pick one, a proposition to make sure that everybody who isn't lily white has to show a green card to get any services in California? I'm sure stuff like that's already been pushed out there on the ballot. Because, you see, one, once again, we saw the right-wing fundamentalist phony Christian Taliban fundraising on the backs of the gay community, and they raised a boatload. And two, in so doing, they have empowered themselves. And they think that they can get away with stuff now. Man, they got this passed even though the liberals were out there voting for Barack Obama. They got this filth passed in Florida. They got it passed in Arizona. They got it passed in California. And we liberals, well, we say, you know, that's a shame. That's a pity. Doggone it. They're just ignorant. They're just bigoted. Well, they are all that. But you know what? They don't want to sit down and talk to us. They still hate us. They're still willing to tell us that we're going to hell. I read an article over at Alternet today by our friend Max Blumenthal about some of the money that went into the Proposition 8 campaign and where it came from. And, of course, it came from some of this money, millions, and by some of this money, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. That would be $900,000. Well, okay, a tenth of a million. A tenth of a million came from Howard Amundsen alone. But there was the millions and millions from the bicycle riding bunch. There were millions of dollars taken from the tithing of little old ladies in Baroque looking Catholic churches. There was money, humongous money, from the Knights of Columbus. There was money from a woman by the name of Elsa Brookhusen, who is the mother of Eric Prince, who's the right-wing fundamentalist founder of the Murder for Hire gang at Blackwater. And Amundsen, a weirdo among weirdos, of course, was the primary backer for those of you who have studied Christian Reconstructionism. He was the primary backer for a fellow by the name of R.J. Rushdoony. And R.J. Rushdoony said straight up and clearly that he wanted to overturn the Constitution of the United States, that he wanted to implement all 613 laws described in the book of Leviticus. You know, even the ones about mixing fibers and the goofy stuff about not eating shrimp. All of it. He said he wanted to eliminate the prisons. And instead of having people serve prison sentences, he wanted criminals to be sentenced to indentured servitude. Goodbye! Goodbye, Bill of Rights. He wanted them whipped. He wanted them sold into slavery. Or he wanted them executed. The people that qualified for execution in R.J. Rushdoony's world were, disobedient children. Because, you know, it says right there in God's holy word that we got to stone disobedient children. Unchaste women, they get the stoning. Oh, come on, let's go to the stoning. They get stoned too.
apostates, in other words, people who don't believe the way that R.J. Rush Dooney believed, because that's the cool thing about having religious power, is you get to declare who the apostates are. Or maybe that's a typo and it means people without prostates. Blasphemers, practitioners of witchcraft.
Make a way, Lord, make a way!
Astrologers, adulterers, Ted Haggard, you get stoned twice! And then, of course, anybody who engaged in sodomy or homosexuality. That's the plan, that's the American future that Howard Amundson, who can just say, oh, 900 million, no problem. That's the plan that he fosters for America. And that's part of why he did what he did in giving $900,000 to the Proposition Hate campaign. This is disturbing in the extreme. And if we, of course, this is nothing new. I've been saying this for years. If we do not actively oppose these evil bastards, if we don't do that, then someday they'll get that theocracy that they want. Someday they'll feel just emboldened enough to maybe stone their first. And bear in mind, since it's a sexual identity issue, there won't be any proof. They'll just think somebody's gay. And they'll kill them, whether they are or aren't. They're not going away. They're emboldened. And while I've argued that some of these wingnuts you just kind of have to ignore and let them sit there at the end of the bar and drool into their beer and just prattle on into the night until the bartender looks at them and says, hey, buddy, you don't got to go home, but you got to go somewhere. Closing time. There are some we can treat that way. You know, Karl Rove, sit down and shut up. But it's time we learn that we have to get in the face of these religion industry monsters before they start killing people. You think if Fred Phelps didn't think he'd get charged by this demon-possessed government for murder, he wouldn't love to kill him some folks? Shh, please. Those sorry bastards are actually going to travel to the funeral of Toot, Madeline Dunham, Obama's grandmother. That's right. The Westboro Baptist Church has announced their intention of protesting that good woman's funeral and declaring that she's in hell. And they've been sued. They've got a judgment hanging over their head. They're still traveling. They're still paying for it. They're still able to get around. And I don't think Senator Obama, as noble as it is, I don't think Senator Obama would want like a long string of Harley riders gunning in their engine to drown these freaks out. They will likely be shunted away to somewhere. But they're out there. They're still doing it. And they're going to... It's not a First Amendment issue. You're not allowed... The First Amendment does not allow one to yell fire in a crowded theater. Or theater in, or movie in a crowded firehouse, for that matter. But some of this stuff, the only way to end it is to confront it. I know some would say, oh, Bob, that's just giving them more publicity. They'll be martyrs. Martyrs don't march outside old ladies' funerals. They don't. They lay there quietly in the dirt. For me, this is the because there's other stuff that's not easy, but more obvious, of course. Things like, got to fix the economy. You know, we're almost down 1,000 points, maybe more than 1,000 points since Tuesday. So, it ain't working again. That's got to be taken care of. We're going, the war in Iraq has got to end. It's got to be called to a halt. It has to end. You know, we've been building this list the last couple of nights of stuff that has to end. Gitmo, closed. For good. Kangaroo courts, won't be another one of them. Habeas corpus must be reaffirmed. And that hateful legislation eliminated. There's a hell of a list. But some of that has to be accomplished by people that we have elected to represent us. The Employee Free Choice Act has to be passed. It has to be gotten past a Senate whose Republican membership is going to want to filibuster it. And it is no longer acceptable that something like that would be filibustered and let Harry Reid just come out and say, well, we tried. No, no, by God, trying no longer counts. The only thing that counts now is getting it done. In 2006, we elected a Democratic majority in both houses of the Congress, and when they got stymied, they said, well, you know, we can't pass this because it'll just go to George Bush, and George Bush will veto it. And some people actually fell for that crap. Now that excuse, in another 74 days, 17 hours, and 27 minutes, that excuse will be gone. If the Democratic Party cannot get the Employee Free Choice Act through the Senate, it'll sail through the House. But if they can't get it through the Senate, then that will be living proof, as if we needed any, that Harry Reid needs replacing. See, I was a little put aback today when Harry Reid announced that he'd had a meeting with Joe Lieberman, and Lieberman, for the time being, still has the chairmanship of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee in the Senate. And my first inclination was, "Oh, Rex, Black, Staggin, Nostle, Black, no." But I'm refraining from that. Me, as somebody who's decidedly liberal, and I guess I'm one of those center-left people. No, I'm all the way to the left, I guess. I'd be, the day after the election. Joe, mail me the gavel, Joe. What, Joe? What committee are you going to be chairman of? Joe, maybe you might have wanted to ask me that question before you gave that speech at the Republican convention. That wasn't your evil twin. That wasn't pod person Lieberman, was it? That was really you, wasn't it? That was you running around the country saying that Barack Obama was inexperienced and not capable of leading this country. That was you, wasn't it, Joe? But we all have to come together now, Harry. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you and Larry Craig go sit on in the back of the Senate and come together? Because you're out of business. That's what I would have done. But Harry didn't. Maybe he's waiting to see what happens in the Senate races in Georgia and Minnesota. In Oregon, the race has been called and Gordon Smith is out of a job. Hallelujah. Thank you to everybody who helped in that. Thank you to News Ninja Gene and News Ninja Susan and everybody in Oregon who helped put Gordon Smith out of a job. Good on ya. So I understand maybe why Harry didn't just, you know, get all dirty Harry on Joe Lieberman. But January's coming, and we better see it. Or if he's going to retain his gavel, there better be a long conversation. Joe, here's how it goes. I'm going to tell you how to vote on every bill. And you're going to vote the way I tell you. Or you'll be on that back bench before you can say bipartisan. Got me, Joe? It's going to take some party discipline. It's going to take some enforcing to get this stuff through. Because, you know, when you talk about the Employee Free Choice Act, what do? Well, the right wing starts on. They're taking away the sacred secret ballot from working Americans. Nope. Doesn't do that at all. Secret ballot is still there. However, if workers choose, they can use a card check agreement that will announce their desire to organize and form a union. That's all it is. That's all. So some of that stuff, that's the kind of stuff that has to be accomplished by our elected representatives. Stuff like what's going on in California, however, that has to be accomplished by feet on the street. And that's all there is to it. There's no getting around that. Only the mass of humanity demanding for all human beings the civil rights guaranteed under the Constitution will change this in California or any of the other states that have these hateful DOMAs, these little Klan rallies on paper. Our pal Marty writes in, he says, though I'm a black man, Proposition 8's passage will induce me to leave this state, the state of my birth, and I won't be sorry. As far as Proposition 8 like goes, there was the Anti-Services for Undocumented Aliens, hateful Proposition number 187. Then there was the Anti-Affirmative Action number 9. Forwarded by one Ward Connerly. Remember your conversation with Sandra? Yeah. Hatred, bigotry, because I think that's where she made me, like, spit take on the monitor. Hatred, bigotry, and discrimination, that would be the most all-American of values. What's next for those fundamentalist religious corporate fascists? Either discriminating against Muslims or bring back the anti-miscegenation laws. Marty. Yeah, Marty, I know. That's kind of what I'm going toward here. Make these right-wingers confront what they've done, either by denying them services, openly challenging them. I mean, can you imagine? The way the right-wing media, the echo chamber and media machine, all you'd have to do is do it two or three times and flush Flimball and the Hannity job and the rest of that filthy, straight people are being denied service, yada, yada, yada. And if it happened twice. But I'm in earnest about it. Did you vote for Proposition 8?
Well, yes.
Get out. Get out of the store. Leave. Don't come back. Call the police if you come back. Not going to serve you. Don't have to serve you. Not welcome here. And I know there are those who would say, oh, but Bob, that's just as bad as they are. Well, this is a referendum. It's not like a lunch. It's not like a Walgreens lunch counter where you know that they've got the sign up that says, no. Because that was the other side of that fight. There were at least open signs of whites only, colored drinking fountains. That's not present in this fight. So there has to be some level of open confrontation on it. I'm sorry, I won't accommodate you. I'd like to check in. How'd you vote on 8? Well, I voted for it. Sleep in the street. Get out. I mean, they're the ones that want the bigotry. The people who voted yes on this proposition. They ached for the bigotry. They ached for the discrimination. They yearned for the prejudice. And it is damned well time that it be handed back to them. You'd like to rent a car? How'd you vote on 8? Well, I voted for it. Walk! Remember all the pharmacists out there who are so concerned about what happens to a single cell inside a woman's body that they won't fill a prescription for the morning after anti-rape drug? Remember that? Oh, we've got legislation. Well, we're going to protect their conscience. Well, what the hell? How the hell is their conscience any better than the conscience of someone who absolutely will not countenance bigotry? I don't see the difference. Oh, I can hear the fundies now. But that pharmacist is protecting life. Oh, okay, I see. So two people who happen to be gay and love each other, they don't have a life that's as of high a quality as a damned unfertilized egg? This bothers me. This bothers me profoundly. You know, Marty, I hope you don't leave California. People have to stay there. We've got to realize that that we have reached a day, and you know, some of this we saw in this last election, this wonderful thrill of victory and hope. We've learned something. I dropped a friendly note to Bart Kopp the other day, just because, you know, I've been reading him since like 1999, maybe earlier, and just said, you know, thank you to him, because really he's the godfather of teaching liberals to fight back. Just dropped him a thank you note, and in part because of what people like Bart Kopp did, more and more people learn to stand up and not just stand there and kind of listen while the wingnuts yammered on about imaginary crap in the sky and George Bush being a godly man, and you know, Iraq's got, you know, Saddam's got them secret weapons of mass destruction, and they're right there underneath the cabana by his pool in one of the, you know it. And we learned to say, no, they're not. Shut the hell up. You're nuts. And that's where this is, too. Stand and fight. Stand and fight. Because short of changing the political process in California and actually letting legislatures do the job of a legislature and, you know, write laws, they've always got these, pardon me, these goofy-ass petitions, these propositions on the ballot. And most of the time the propositions, if they really hit the national consciousness, it's because they're driven by hate. And the idea, I think, as Mark Levine mentioned, the idea that you can modify the constitution of the state with nothing more than a majority, you know, 50% plus 0.00000001%, and that modifies the constitution. Holy crap! Who thought of that nonsense? So, seems to me that this battle is on the ground. Very good, Matthew. Yeah. Wouldn't you love to hear this? I'd like to order the filet of sole with
tomato gratiné and coulis of tomato and gratiné of lobster. How did you vote on 8? Well, I voted for it.
We've rewarded laziness and called it welfare. You no longer look to God, you look for a check in the mail. In the Bible says the man that does not work should not eat. I still think that ought to be the law.
Everybody say it with me.
If you don't want to get up off your blessed assurance and go to work, starve!
Starve!
I don't care. Starve! I don't feel sorry for you.
You want a ham on rye? You voted for 8? Starve! Because until we get in their faces the way they've gotten into ours, they're going to get away with more and more and more of this stuff. With bigotry like this enshrined in the law of California, how long is it until there's a proposition to make sure that two men can't hold hands in public? Or two women? You think I'm over the top in this? I don't. I know what these right-wing religion industry zealots will do when they get the bit in their teeth. And they're not feeling very defeated right now. They're downright jubilant. We've protected marriage. And by the way, we just made a whole lot more money off you suckers. Oh, hell, you ought to see the interest on it a lot. We don't ever have to touch the principal. $500,000 and more from the American Family Association in Mississippi. In Mississippi. The hell does an organization in Mississippi have paying to pass a proposition in California? Huh? I mean, I could at least understand it if the American Family Association was, headquartered in Lompoc. But they're in Tupelo, Mississippi. You know, the chief underwear store or whatever of the Mormon church, that's in Salt Lake City. And last I checked, that's still not a burb of California yet. And they get away with it. Well, some aren't willing to let it happen. And I'm coming to the phones in just a sec. I got this link. It's a diary entry by an author named Blissable, B-I-L-L-S-S-A-B-L-E, over at Daily Kos. It is titled simply, and, you know, it's one of those URLs that there's no way I could give to you, so... But it's titled simply, Take Action Against LDS on Proposition 8. And it was posted today. So look up Blissable's diary, B-I-L-L-S-S-A-B-L-E, and Take Action Against LDS on Proposition 8, because this is a handy little post. This has little linkies and everything. According to this post, it'll take about 5 minutes for you to follow a couple of links. And print out a couple of stories, and then get a form from IRS.gov, and the information is there for you to put on the form, listing the Mormon officials on the IRS complaint form. And once you've done that, you check off the boxes for false exemption and public political corruption. And then Blissable suggests that in the comments section, you demand that the Mormon church be fined and their tax-exempt status revoked because of their repeated and blatant violation of the IRS's separation of church and state rules under 501c3 and for conspiring to interfere with the state's political process. Now, once you've done all that stuff, you can do it again with the IRS complaint form.
And you can do it with regard to the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, and you want to be naming the Reverend Donald E. Wildman, Jr. And you can just go over to AFA.net and wander around there, and you'll find the names of it, and you'll find them crowing about the $500,000 they gave to fool with California politics when they're sitting there in Tupelo. And maybe it's 10, 15 minutes out of your life, tops. And it might be one of the most patriotic things you do or have done since you went to the ballot box. You know, if these bastards want to say that they're charities and that they take in charitable donations, which are supposed to be used for charitable purposes, what the hell charitable purpose was there in enshrining bigotry in California law? How is that even remotely definable as charitable? Here's the easy answer. It wasn't. So again, go to dailycoast.com. And search for Blissable's diary, B-L-I-S-S-A-B-L-E, and the diary entry is take action against LDS on Prop 8. And as usual, where anything that I suggest that anyone in this audience do, I will do this myself. You know, I don't do diaries at Daily Coast and stuff like that. It's enough of a little miracle that I manage to get on the air every night for 3 hours. Or every afternoon or morning or wherever you are. But I'll do this. I will absolutely do this. Because this was just filthy what the Mormon Church did in California. And it was filthy what the Roman Catholic Church did in California. And it was filthy what the American Family Association did in California. And anybody who gave so much as one miserable penny to the attempt to enshrine bigotry in California's law, they have done no greater evil in their lives. So please do this. You know, I don't go around giving marching orders or anything. I'm not that guy. But please do this. Make it count. Think of all the other things that you do with 15 minutes of your life. And then think of these 15 minutes. 15 minutes that may actually put an end to organizations like the Mormons' ability to sway the politics of a huge state like California. You got 15 minutes for that? You got 15 minutes to pull the teeth of the most rabid, vicious, hate-filled organizations in the United States? Do you have 15 minutes for that? If it was your marriage, would you have 15 minutes for it? Find the time. Because no matter how long you live, you will not come to the end of it and say, "Oh my God, I wish I'd watched the Weather Channel a little more." Or, "Dear Lord, why didn't I spend more time playing games online?" Ultimately, when the end comes, the ledger is clear. And it's not some golden book read up in the clouds. It is the ledger that you yourself have kept. And you yourself will determine the worth of your life. And it will be on things like this. When you had a chance to stand up for those who are rendered powerless in this nation. And if you can answer the question, yes, I did, then that is the biggest part of the makeup of the worth of your life. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
I heard something that was sort of disturbing to me today on, I think it was Tom Hartman's show, report.
Mm-hmm.
That most of the new Democrats we're getting are Blue Dog Democrats.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least.
But you know what? And they're feeling like it's reflecting, you know, what the general public wants. But, you know, if you got a Democrat and you got one Democrat and you got one Republican running, if you're going to vote Democrat, you don't have any other choice whether they're Blue Dog or the other. But that doesn't mean that. You know,
well, that's why I've been
upsetting.
It is, and that's why I've been making the argument all along that this, you know, I think I said it yesterday, actually, Juanita. This is the my favorite punchline. You know, coffee breaks over, back on your heads. We partied for 24 hours and said, we won, yay! But it's gonna take as much or more determination and energy to keep focus in this administration and this Congress as it ever took. You know, all we were doing when the Republicans had power was pointing out what they were screwing up. But now there's work to be done. Now the hard business of governing comes along, and you've got a majority in both houses of Congress, and we've got a majority we've got the White House, and now we have to, honest to God, get serious about the work. And we can't let up for a minute.
No. I think what's going to make it so hard is Nancy Pelosi. I really do. As long as she's got power.
Well, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid both.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I wonder if Harry Reid wouldn't do better with a different kind of leader if he was still there, if we had a different leader in the House. I just wonder.
I don't know. Of course,
I'd like to have both of them.
Well, when the new Congress is reconvened, they'll have to. Every time a Congress reconvenes, they have to do all new rules and all new elections of leadership and everything, because it's an all new Congress. But I don't harbor any hope, faint or otherwise, that the Speaker of the House will be anyone but Nancy Pelosi. And I harbor, frankly, at this point, I harbor no hope that the Majority Leader of the Senate will be anyone but Harry Reid.
Yeah, I know. But, I think that's an obstacle for us.
But that raises the ante on our ability to keep pressure on our individual elected representatives.
You know, no matter how many petitions they got, one time they got a million petitions. It didn't make any difference. Made no difference.
I know.
But
so,
I had just a few things else I wanted to say.
Absolutely. Go right ahead. All the time in the world.
You were talking about the Proposition 8. I believe Florida passed that, too.
Well, it was a different thing. But, yeah, it was another stupid defensive marriage thing.
I think ours was supposed to be like an amendment.
Probably was. I believe it was a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm. We had so many propositions, you couldn't understand half of them.
Well, that they're written that way for a reason. They want people to be confused when they go to the booth.
I can believe it.
You know, Proposition 8 wasn't clearly stated to be anti-gay. It was a proposition
mm-hmm.
to defend marriage and define marriage as a union between one man and one woman.
Well, talking about the churches and all, given for all of that, they don't just say, you know, talk about, well, the Bible doesn't approve it. They make people, the ones that don't accept that, they'll keep on. They'll make somebody afraid, or they'll make them think they're going to hell, or, you know, even no matter how they really feel.
Right.
So it's, they work on it. You know, they're manipulative. It's not just about what's right or wrong. But the thing is that, now those people you were talking about was that they're going to whip people and all like that, stone people.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that? Was that the one that testified at one time?
No, that was R.J. Rush Dooney, the founder of Christian Reconstructionism. He has since shuffled off to hell. But he was funded by a guy named Amundsen. And Amundsen is still around, and Amundsen pumped $900,000 smack dab into that Proposition 8 advocacy
group. They got some kind of an ulterior motive for that, don't you think?
Absolutely. Their ulterior motive
not
is
just,
that...
Not just, you know, what it says, but there's a lot behind the scene on that. Like...
It's really not that ulterior, at least to us, Juanita. Their motive is to own and control the government of the United States and to reduce this nation to a theocracy where they determine what you believe, what you think, what you feel, who can love, who can marry, who can exist. Because, again, these Christian Reconstructionists want to reinstitute stoning.
And but not just for... being gay.
Yeah.
I mean, like he says, there's a lot of stuff in Leviticus you could, and elsewhere. But what about, I mean, I know they're not, I don't think they're Christians. I mean, they may think they are, they may say they are, but what about Jesus with the woman that was, that they were, the people were getting ready to stone her because
I believe that's from the book of Mark.
Yeah,
and it's a nice little addition. It didn't that story actually didn't appear or didn't exist in the original book of Mark. It was added 100 or so years later, but it's a nice story and it captures a good idea that none of us are without sin and that
those men were just as guilty, you know, and.
Sure.
Doesn't it sound like the Taliban to you?
It absolutely is. That's what these people are. They are the Taliban carrying a cross and a flag.
But that has nothing to do with Christianity that I know about, you know, a lot of things don't. But I think it's just a bunch of sadists. I think it's just like the Ku Klux Klan or anything else. And... they're a bunch of sadists.
They're a lot of things.
Yeah, they are a lot of things. Right.
They are intolerant. They are theocrats. They are bloodthirsty. You know, because remember all these pro-lifers. If you get one, well, what about abortion? Oh, we got to end abortion. We're killing all the millions of little babies. And you say, well, what about? And then you ask them, well, what about capital punishment? Kill them! Kill them! Kill them all!
Well, what about the Republicans have been in charge for low these many years? Why haven't they done away with it altogether?
Well, you just identified the $64 question, Juanita.
Yeah.
But this has nothing to do with the sanctity of life. Remember when George Bush said, "It's a culture of life." you remember that?
Like he wouldn't know.
Right. You know, he already had the slaughter, the blood of, you know, thousands of slaughtered Iraqi civilians on his hand. And because of that woman with the jello where her brain used to be in Florida, he was talking about a culture of life. Well, the reason they haven't done anything, they have the courts, they have the White House, they have the Congress, they did nothing. Except for that stupid little partial birth abortion bill, because, you know, ask any real medical professional, they'll tell you, partial birth abortion is not even real. It's not a medical procedure. It's not an acknowledged medical technique. It is not a medical circumstance. It is unreal. So they cranked up a law, they ginned up a law to ban a practice that doesn't exist. I mean, you're in medical school, and okay, today we're going to learn about how to do a partial birth abortion. That doesn't happen.
Now, what is that supposed to be?
I
don't understand the.
It's a PR. It's a PR piece. It's a piece of advertising.
But what's it supposed to mean?
Partial birth abortion. That means they bring the baby part of the way out of the womb and then kill it and then drag it the rest of the way out and abort the baby that way. And there's all kinds of gory stuff about how they stick scissors in the back of the baby's neck. I mean, it's just gross.
Is that where the fetus is almost full term?
Yeah, yeah.
The one they did away with, yeah.
Yeah. But it's not medically real.
Yeah. Okay.
I
don't know why I thought it was named something else, but they just all of a sudden just didn't make any sense of what it means. But it's a big money maker for them. That's what it's all about, I think.
Precisely. That's what I was getting at a minute ago. If they really wanted to do away with abortion, they would have done so in the last
right.
8 years.
They could have done a lot of things.
But you see, they make tons of money off of this.
Right, right.
They had to, among other things, if Californians had legally and peaceably been able to just go about their business and marry, they wouldn't have been able to raise all the money that they raise on the backs of gay people.
Right. Right. For sure and for certain. I totally agree.
So, look, every election, this is a broad, broad painting. It's a great big mural on the wall, Juanita, telling us exactly how the Republican Party operates. See, way back as far as Richard Nixon, their policies and their ideas were depleted. They were utterly bereft of anything new or fresh or different, and all they could do was just gin up fear and hate, and that's the Southern strategy, and that's Nixon saying, my friends, I can end the war, but I won't tell you until you elect me. and lo and behold, there was John McCain saying the thing, my friends, I know how to win in Iraq, but I won't tell you unless you make me president.
Right.
It was Nixon Redux, and so they do all this. But in 1973, Juanita, Roe versus Wade was passed, or not passed, but it was handed down by the Supreme Court, and that stated that there was a constitutional right for a woman to have control of the functions of her own body, and it was based on other previous cases like Griswold versus Connecticut, which simply said that a woman has access to contraception, that you can't ban a woman from taking the pill. So when that happened, that was the biggest gift the right-wing religion industry ever had.
Yeah.
And they have made millions on this. They have made absolute millions on this. And as a consequence, they don't want billions, maybe trillions. They don't want it banned. They want it there because it's about the only thing that the Republican Party has by which they can get their vote, their little knuckle walking, mouth breathing voters to the polls anymore.
Yeah.
And as abortion has sort of faded a little bit.
Yeah.
They have ramped up their efforts with regard to gay people.
Yeah.
Because that's the way the religion industry is, Juanita. They never talk in positive terms. They talk about what they're against. They're against the gays. They're against the liberals. They're against the atheists. They're against the women who want the abortions. Blah, blah, blah. They're against. And yet they've got this religion of peace that is supposed to promise pie in the sky when you die. And the gospel means the good news.
Yeah.
And they can't bear to tell it. I mean, like these freaks, Rush Dooney and that crowd, they never talked about anything that Jesus said. Every time they start quoting something, it's Leviticus or it's Acts or it's Paul. But Jesus, he's silent on all the stuff they hate. And that's a real problem for them.
I heard Rush Limbaugh, people attempt at quoting scripture or something, and it was something he had totally made up. I mean, it was funny if it wasn't so sad.
I know. And
it was about, you know, God doesn't help those that don't help himself. If you teach a man to fish, he can fish for a lifetime. But if you just give him a fish, he'll be hungry the next day.
And he'll vote Democrat. And my friends, he'll vote Democrat for the rest of his days. Yeah, I think I remember that.
Sometimes you have to give, you know, people what they need right then, because sometimes if you're so hungry, you're not going to be able to be taught to fish. I've suffered from malnutrition before, and it's a very painful, horrible thing. And it's, those people are not able to get out. Oh, come on, I'm going to teach you to fish now. You can do your own fishing. But it's just ridiculous the way some of them, you know, they're supposed to be this big deal Christian, and they don't know nothing about Scripture. It's like, you know, when they were going up there and praying to the golden calf up in New York City.
Oh, didn't that just, and I never got around to talking about that. You sent me that, and
yeah,
it just
well, I heard it on, where I heard about it was on the Young Turks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, you know, he was raised Mormon, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't believe anything now. But he said, I do read the Bible. He said, I think I know more about the Bible. He said, don't they know the story of the golden calf? But you could see the picture of them, like one guy had his hand on the horn. And I was like, God in heaven, you know, what in the world?
Oh, and yeah, because they got the one hand on the horn and the other hand's all raised up and their eyes are all clenched shut and they're probably speaking in tongues and getting ready to roll on. I wouldn't roll around on Wall Street if I was them.
But I mean, it's just madness.
Well, it absolutely is, Juanita. And when you consider, these people don't read their Bible. No, they really don't. Jenk is right.
Jenk said, I don't believe in it, but he said, I read it. And he said, I think I know more about the Bible than a lot of them do.
Well, see, I'm kind of geeky that way too. Well, you know that, Juanita. I actually enjoy going and reading it from time to time. And I went and read the story of the golden calf, and, I don't know if Mark Levine is handy or not, but I know he's well versed as well. I went and read my translation of the Golden Calf, and my translation said that while Moses was gone, they instructed Aaron, if I've got this right, they instructed Aaron to give him an idol to worship, because I guess they were just kind of getting a little homesick for Egypt and their statues with hippopotamus heads and bird-headed people and all kinds of fun stuff all over creation. But the part that grabbed me was it said Aaron instructed all the women to give up their earrings.
Yeah.
And that was what he melted down and fashioned the golden calf from. And I couldn't help but be struck that there's a lesson right in that it was the women giving up their earrings.
Yeah.
It was the women who were called upon to give up the stuff, because after all, you know, women.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those little moments where, you know, the women get the blame.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see what I'm talking about?
I think I do, yeah.
It doesn't say, and the men gave up their rings from their fingers and gave verily the necklaces from about their neck, ho glory, and the women gave up their ear. Nope, it's just all the women gave up their earrings.
I never thought about that. That's very possible. You know, a lot of those things, you can really dig deep in them. They're kind of.
Well, I don't know if anybody will ever. I don't know if anybody will ever break me of my upbringing, but I was sitting there talking with Agnes about it. And I said, you know, and you know, I was reading it. We discuss it back and forth. You know, we'd make a really lovely Christian couple if only we'd participate. but there's too much insane crap involved, and I just can't do it.
You know, I've been around some of those Christian couples, and you'd be surprised. Well, you wouldn't be surprised, but some of them.
I know. Yeah, that's you know, the running joke about the deacon caught his hand in the church secretary's drawers. But we were reading it together, and I read that to her, and she said, "Read that back." And I did, and she said, "Look at that, Bob. They're blaming the women again. Where's the men's rings?" And I said, "Well, I'll be darned."
I have to read that again. Well, I just find the Bible to be very humorous, too, because it is so human. You know, when they tell the stories about the different, you know, like David and all. And
mm-hmm.
I used to think God wasn't very nice to Saul. Because,
you know, I always kind of thought Saul got a raw deal, too. Glad to know I'm not the only one.
But David, a minister told me one time that it was because David repented. But David did some horrible things.
Oh, yeah.
Really horrible.
And he
used his power as a king, you know. But some of those things are funny. I think you know, Jesus, some man came to him and said, Master, make my brother share the inheritance with me. And Jesus said to him, Man, who made me a judge, your master over you?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. To me, those
are lessons about the venality of people.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
I mean, it's like the guy who prayed every night, Dear God, help me win the lottery. Let me win the lottery, God. And one night God talked back and said, meet me halfway, buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Those are stories about the venality of people, because and one of the things that drive me absolutely battiest about all of that, Juanita, is when you see some guy catch a pass for a touchdown in the end zone and he immediately makes this big production of getting on one knee and bowing his head and hugging that football and sticking his one finger up in the air and going, Jesus. Because Jesus helped him read the cover too, and you know, head fake the corner and outrun the safety. That's all the king of the universe has to do, is sit around and do upsets on Sunday.
I used to, when I first got interested in football, I used to pray for my team to win. You know, I would get so upset, but I don't do it anymore.
I think we've all done it. I have.
But anyway, one more thing I wanted to talk about, I think, is the only thing. But you know who I feel sorry for now is Biden.
How so?
And his wife. Look at the house they're going to have to move into. The house where Dick Cheney lives.
Oh, they'll be fumigating for months. I mean, just the smell from all the steel rubbing against itself, from where they were burning up all the shredders on the way out. That'll be enough. But
well, I think there's going to be some of that fire and brimstone stuff too, don't you?
What did Hugo Chavez say? I smell brimstone.
Yeah, right. He said, "I know the devil was here because I can smell the brimstone."
I can still smell like the sulfur. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I gotta ask you, cause see, look what you've done to me, Juanita. I gotta ask you, what did you think of Elizabeth's little concession speech? You got me watching The View now.
Wasn't that precious?
Yeah. I know some people I saw some reactions to it, and somebody said, "Well, look, you know, we were stunned by her conciliatory tone," but I not me. I don't know, maybe you didn't get out of it what I did, but when she said, "I looked down at little Gracie and I said, nobody lost." Honey, you lost. You didn't just lose a little bit. You got gut stomped.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the things she had said the day before, my gosh.
Right, but she's going to be conciliatory now because she doesn't want to get run.
Bush was awful conciliatory too, wasn't he?
Yeah, but her ignorance just
hurts more so.
Yeah, because nobody lost, sweetie. America won because you know, I was a tough critic, but I'm on board now too. And no, you lost, sweetie. All your little hateful right wing agenda and your America too and your Reverend Wright. Ah, Elizabeth, you so lost.
Oh, you're talking about Reverend Wright. There's one thing I don't really agree with. Mark Levine on about that. I do believe that the government could be putting the seeds of
HIV, AIDS.
HIV, because, I mean, look at what they did to the people up in Tuskegee.
Well, not just that. Look at what the CIA did in terms of more or less helping to create the crack nightmare. And that was when the CIA was in the cocaine business during the Iran-Contra scandal. It was cocaine, it was guns, it was missiles to Iran. I mean, it was a whole filthy little business enterprise.
Well, I was applied for a Well, she comes to be a guinea pig for the Department of Agriculture.
Oh, really?
And I was going to go to North Dakota and stay there for a year and get paid $175 a week and be able to take courses and all kind of stuff. But I didn't qualify. But this black girl that was there, she said, Juanita, don't you go. Don't you go. Said that government, your folks will never hear from you again.
Probably and, wise words.
Yeah, because they know a lot more than the average white person does, because they've been done so rotten.
Well, that's why I loved what Wanda Sykes said there at the top of the program.
Oh, that was great. I love her too. I like her anyway.
Yeah, but I'm so dense. I watched that clip, and we were all looking and what is her costume? And then I realized suit, dollars, and that thing over her head. I was, what is that? Oh, that's her golden parachute. She's a Wall Street banker.
Oh.
I'm a little slow sometimes, Juanita.
Me too.
Well, Juanita, it's awful good talking to you, dear. I've got a couple of lights blinking here.
Okay.
We'll roll things along.
Okie doke. You take care.
All right. Bye now.
Good night.
That's our View correspondent, Juanita, calling from Florida. And rolling merrily along now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed, what's up?
Not a whole lot. I'm just listening and trying to figure out all these placements Obama's making and so forth. And But I certainly agree with Juanita. She always has a good conversation. But I was going to tell you one I had with the... what I call the opponents this morning.
Oh, really?
And we got into it over this, what do y'all call it, the fair doctrine.
Oh, the fairness doctrine?
Mm-hmm. And, we got into it pretty hot and heavy. And I said, yeah, that station is really fair. I said, we got Michael Savage, or did have, because I never listened to him. And I said, I forgot the other guy's name. It comes on there at 5 after 12.
Oh, Neil Bortz. Yeah.
And then Steve, I said, that's really fair, isn't it? I said, in this part of the county up here, in this part of the state, we don't have where we can hit radio with anything on but that. And I said, the only way we're going to ever have anything is force you all to do it. And I said, right now, I personally won't buy nothing that station sponsors, and I don't recommend anybody do because of the unfairness and the one way. And I said, we had, the station used to have, it was pretty much equality when the other two people was on there, and then he went on to explain that Bob... said he had talks with Bob and said he thought that y'all understood each other. And then when you got on the air, you went the opposite way.
Huh?
Yeah. We got into it hot and heavy. I tell you what, it was bad. Other people called in. We got on the veterans deal. You know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
And you got some idiots up here that still think this hospital won't kill you over there. You know, with their neglectfulness.
Yeah, yeah.
And one thing led to another. I mean, we had I had him hopping mad when it was over, but two of these cronies called in and said that basically I was a crybaby, and Mel tried to call in, and it was going off by that time.
Oh, and just think, he could have spent the morning reading the newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah, and I got on him over on Wayne. I said, you have caused Wayne not to call. I said, you've won't let Jethro call. And I said, even as bad as Jim is, those airways should be made for everybody. And I said, that would expand your listening audience because of the freedom of speech factor. And I said, but as long as you got it closed off and you start disqualifying, I said, that's the reason you got your dirty dozen. And, oh, man, I had them hopping. And that's anyway.
You know, and Ed, that's the reason he's a morning host in the fifth smallest market in America, and people the world over know my name and Guy James's name and Mark Levine's name and John Fox's name, and tune in regularly. And, you know, there's that poor little freak down in Beckley who's heard by the same 30 people every day.
Yeah. Well, he really thinks that his popularity is something else. And you can tell by every so, and especially when one of them tells him how great he is, you know. It just goes all, he's eat up with it. But,
well, you gotta, he's got a reason to be proud of himself. You know, there he is. He's got a radio show. He talks for 2 hours every day and he doesn't have a bit of talent. Not a lot of people get that.
Yeah, and but he's got a wife that makes $25 an hour and supports his bad habits.
Well, there's that too,
and that's a fact. And you know, he couldn't afford his cigarettes and his gas and his booze if it wasn't for her.
Well, if his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, that's just me.
If I could think all that crap, I'd tell him.
we'll write it down for you later, Ed.
But Mel will probably start back in on it in the morning. And
well, it'll be good for his ratings. That's awful nice of liberal Democrats to help keep him afloat. See, that's the way we are as liberals and us Democrats. We'll even help out a right wing horse's ass like that guy.
I believe you're sort of making fun of me for calling.
I'm not making fun of you. I'm making fun of other people. I understand why you call him.
I despise him, you know, and the veterans.
But I'm playing it. But what's going to happen? Like I said, election night, the happiest man in America is Rush Limbaugh, followed by Sean Hannity. Because all they have to do is sit for 4 years and scream, "He's a Muslim!" You know, my kid came home from school today, Ed, and told me that they're telling him at school that Obama, he's going to take the oath of office on that Muslim Bible. No kidding.
Mm-mm.
Seventh grader.
Yeah. You're hearing, you know, I looked at the map of West Virginia. And down the eastern part of West Virginia, that's where Obama got his vote, what he did get.
Sure.
And I can't understand those counties where the coal mines is so, where the areas are depressed, and the coal mines, the unions, that did not go along with the...
Well, first of all, the UMWA doesn't have nearly the power that it once had. Sadly, it just doesn't.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I know Cecil Roberts, and he ain't worth a crap, and I ain't talking. I hope he's listening. He knows who I am, and I know him, and I've known him since the pistol pack and Miller was in there. I've known them all, but I don't have a bit of – He's all mouth, and he don't have what it takes to deliver what he says, because I think the men know him like I know him, and but yet the politicians look up to him. They really believe he can deliver a vote. Well, they should wake up, because he can't. You know, he can't deliver the kind of vote that the mine workers used to be able to put out. But it could be because the split in mountaintop removal and regular mining, conventional mining. But I looked at
that little bit of sleaze about how Obama will shut down all the coal mines. That did come out 2 days before. And they said, oh, it was secret. It was hidden from the public. Who is this man? It had only been up on the website for a year for anybody to go listen to that wanted it.
Yeah. But all he wants is, the way I understand it, is to clean it up. You know, get coal clean. Use it that way. But it's guys like Steve O'Brien that scares the crap out of the coal miners. With, and they had one guy on there said they may have to worry about their job, but it's 10, 12 years away if it comes to it. But he was talking positive to the coal miners, you know, that some of them may have to get prepared because of the technology that's going to apply to energy. And that's my reasoning on it too, really. I think there'll always be a market in China and those places.
Well, they talk about clean coal, but when you pin the scientists down, Ed, they'll all tell you clean coal is 20, 30, 50, 100, never years away, because it is what it is. It's like clean mud. Okay, it's fat-free cooking oil. It's an advertising slogan. It's a contradiction in terms. You know, military intelligence. It's fake. It's not real.
Yeah. Well, you can go down where they load the ships there, around Hampton and those places, and where they're dumping that stuff off of conveyors and then redoing the air. All you have to do is drive by. You have to wash your car just from driving by.
Yeah.
So they, you know, clean coal, you know, how do you clean dust? You know, if you don't clean it, you wash it into a stream or something like that.
And that's the whole thing. You know, the CO2 goes into the atmosphere, the poisons go into the ground. One of the things that some of the environmental groups here, from Coal River Mountain Watch to the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, they've got this thing called the Sludge Safety Project, and they're trying to teach people what injected coal sludge does to their well water. I mean, there are people in the state getting killed, and instead, because they've got all these sludge lakes around here, billions and billions of gallons held up behind mud dams, and you can only go so far with those, so they've started, and it's not new, but they inject the coal sludge into old mines instead. And it seeps through the water table, and it gets into people's wells, and that stuff is not good for you.
Well, we can't drink my well water now. And the next-door neighbor had his sent off, and it's got, the poison that's in meats and stuff sometimes.
Oh, E. coli?
E. coli, yeah. It's got that. Plus, right under my land, they have mined, and that kind of stuff is settling there, and it's hard to tell what all is in that water that they're pulling up out of there.
Well, that's why these organizations are doing water testing now, to show people what has been done to them. You know, there's a reason that you have these cancer clusters in West Virginia. It's not that, you know, we're particularly cancer prone. It's that we're poisoned.
Yeah. Yeah, between the air and the water we drink, and even our land is polluted by this. You know, when it rains, you know, and so your food you raise yourself. You think you raise good gardens and good clean food to eat, but I'm sure that if you had your food tested that you raised, that there'd be contaminants in it.
You could take a hair sample, Ed, of just about anybody in these United States and test it for mercury, and virtually anybody in the country will come back with a higher level of mercury in their system than the EPA tolerates or recognizes as being safe.
Yeah. Well, Clinton, you know, when Clinton was in, he closed one of the places down that had a high content of mercury put out, and then the brilliant one had let him open it back up.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you watch Dave Maher.
Bill Maher?
Bill Maher last week or not.
Nah, I don't have HBO anymore, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to watch him tonight. I know he's going to be interesting tonight, because he made the comment. He said, I don't know about Obama. He said he don't cheat on his wife. He's a good family man. And he said, he's clean cut and he's thin and he's smart. He said, what do we need with somebody like that in Washington?
Oh, it's going to be, I saw a clip of that, and he said, it's going to be a tough time for comedians.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to make them. He said, they're going to have to accept the fact that when we talk about him, that we don't mean any offense against other blacks. It's, we got to have something on the president, and he don't leave us room to have nothing. So that sounds great to me.
Yeah, it does.
That's a dramatic change.
But, you know, what I keep saying, Ed, is, you know, our job is not finished, not by a long shot.
Oh, I know it. And I, just like we said about Rockefeller and Ray Hall, until we can get their head on them and realize and get enough people telephoned in their office, because you can't get them to get on the phone herself, Bob. They won't do it.
Oh, no, no, no.
And you can call their office here, and you can't even get them there. You get one of their aides or whatever. But that's my spiel today.
Well, I tell you what, Ed, I'll put you back on hold. And I'm just giving you a little bit of hell about talking to Steve. I couldn't. Where did that business come from that he thought I was on the same page and then I flipped?
Yeah.
He's insane.
He's a damn liar.
I never.
You know, I got on him for cutting Steve off or cutting Wayne off, and he said he didn't do it, and he told me something I was supposed to say. And Mel happened to be listening to him the morning that we got into it and what I said, and that's what he was going to call him about. He said you couldn't attack the host. And I said, well, what makes you different from everybody else? You attacked everybody. And he said, all the people I attacked has got offices here in Beckley. They can hear and respond or come on the show. And I didn't think fast enough, or I'd have told him, no, they don't. How about Tom Daschle and those guys like that he...
Sure, yeah.
He's a stinking liar. I mean, like you said, they're typical Republicans.
Yep.
And that's the bottom part of the story. But anyway.
All right. Well, Ed, I'll put you back on hold.
And I thank you very much.
My pleasure. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Take care, Ed. It's our buddy Ed here in Fayette County. And, you know, I don't want to give anybody any free publicity or anything. So I'm not going to give out. I don't know if they still stream the program or not. But what he's talking about is this little right-wing gas bag down in Beckley. Honest to God, really, what I said is true. If his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB. This is a guy who said that the Monongahela flows out of Pittsburgh, that the New River flows south. He's stupid. I mean, even for a right winger, the guy is stupid. So that's who Ed's talking about. God, I mean, he's a real live moron. No kidding. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's that insult again?
If his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB.
That's a good one. Oh, Bob, I needed that laughter. I've been having nothing but computer problems for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, no.
Oh, I needed that, buddy. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Why can a little black bastard dog growl and bite at people, leave them puncture wounds, yet, he's just grumpy? But because some idiot trains a pit bull to attack children, we have to kill all pit bulls. Now, you heard about Barney biting the press reporters, right?
Yeah.
He's real grumpy. So you got him all grumpy. Bush has probably been kicking him because he's been taking a habanero enema. Did you see him crying?
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful thing. But, you know, I mean, Barney is an abused pet. Jesus, he got dropped on his head. Remember that?
That's...
I'd be mad, too. I mean, if you made George Bush bear his sock, drop his socks and raise his pants leg, it's probably nothing but a serious. It looks like he's getting attacked by some little short vampire in his sleep. Just puncture wounds.
It's tough. I can't trust a little dog. That's just me.
I love all dogs. We've got a new family member here, and he's a little schnauzer, and we're just buddies. And I love him. And we've had little dogs and big dogs. You know, we had Labrador Retriever. We had a beautiful Labrador Retriever for a yellow lab for 15 years, and loved her to death. And we got this little schnauzer now. Once upon a time, we had a little Italian greyhound. And it was like having a little tiny deer or racehorse in the house. Or maybe like a little tiny four-legged Eastern European gymnast. You know how they walk with that little prance going on?
Yeah,
what it was like. I'm a dog guy.
I am too, but you know how.
But we got our cat too, so, you know. And he and I are pals.
Yeah. Kitties.
Yeah, Mr. Milkbud is the only cat I've ever known who comes when you whistle.
Mine comes when I go like that.
And whenever I'm outside or whenever I pull into the driveway, he's like a dog. He runs. Hey, how you doing, Bob? Oh, how you doing, Milkbud? Yeah, it runs.
Yeah, I like
with all that going on.
And my pets don't bite my friends either. So
well, true. Yeah. Now I've heard what can happen when you say B-U-S-H to the four-legged family member.
Cheney.
Oh,
don't make me get Cheney.
He's not in the room, is he?
No, he's upstairs sleeping. Yeah. He'll hear me though.
Barney, you know that poor dog. That poor little dog.
Well, I guess that's how I feel with pit bulls that wind up becoming, you know, murderers. It's like, well, man, what did you do to make this dog that evil, you know, because they're usually not. I mean, yeah, just to defend the breed that's the most maligned, I think, in the world.
Oh yeah, and once upon a time it was German Shepherds and Doberman Pinschers went through it, and but they're all just lovely animals, and it's all in how you train them.
It's all how you treat them. And in fact, they're talking about. I got it in my family. There's idiots in my family that. They'll leave their dog, and it just bit my cousin in the head or something stupid like that, and she had to get surgery. I mean, and my mom told me this, and I'm like, they're idiots. Yeah, because I know what kind of, you know, they're Guidos, and they get a dog to have a big dog, and you know, be a big dog, and they put him on in a kennel with a cement floor, and only take him out on special occasions and feed him, and that's the only contact the animal gets. And so, I mean, that's just their fault. You can't treat an animal. You know, I don't know about you, but my pet is a member of my family.
You're darn right.
That's how it is, you know. Barney is a freaking prop that...
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not making movies anymore. You know. Barney, you're either with me or you're against me. And now you've turned on me. Your movie career is over.
Seriously, I wonder what kind of dog Barack is going to pick. Do we know yet? So it's probably up to the kids, huh? But, you know.
Well, but there was good news about that, Albert. I was very, very pleased to see that they're not going to go and spend a fortune on some purebred. They're going to go adopt a puppy at the shelter. Isn't it nice watching them do the right thing on even the little decisions?
The evils of liberalism.
Yeah.
You know, how dare they not bring real pedigree? It's probably going to be some mutt like Gonzo, and I'll tell you, mutts are good dogs, not for nothing.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's where you cue up the clip from Stripes. We're mutts.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yep, exactly. Well, think of, well, diversity is always better anyway, right? You know? Those, when they make them too bred, you know, they get a little dumb in the...
Get a little dumb, get a little of that hip dysplasia thing going on, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They start becoming blood hungry and all sort of crap.
No, I remember the bark of our beloved Miranda. She was the golden lab, yellow lab. Yeah. And she had a bark that would inspire fear in God Almighty. Yeah. But she's a big baby.
Yep.
And just loved that dog. She was so precious. When Margie was just tiny and was first learning to walk, I kid you not. You know how it is with babies when they're toddling and they fall over on their, I named her Miranda, but after a while that got shortened by the babies to Nana.
Cute.
And Miranda would literally walk sideways behind Margie when she was little tiny. And if Margaret got ready to fall over, Miranda would do a floor dive so that the baby would land on her.
That's awesome.
Oh, it was the most...
I believe you.
It was just precious.
Exactly. Well, that's why I got my dog, I got him as a puppy with the baby, so he did, but he's so good with, I mean, he obviously grew faster than they did, but, you know, he's a gentle. They can, you know, that's one thing I don't think you should ever have to worry about. I mean, it's almost like, you know, seeing Barney do something like that kind of shows you a little bit about him.
Well, it really does. Is there anybody in this audience that actually thinks George Bush has ever gotten the kibble bag out and gone and fed Barney? This is a guy who put M80s up the rear ends of frogs just to watch them die. You know, there are stupids out there. I remember seeing the little feature packages on the news channels or whatever. Every time Disney re-releases or releases a new or does something with the 101 Dalmatians, idiots go out and buy Dalmatians.
Yeah.
Dalmatians are one dog in the family and they demand attention and they got to take a lot of love and a lot of training. And they're wonderful dogs, but they're not the cute little puppy you get for the toddler because they just saw the movie and they want one like Ponzo or whatever the dog's name was. No, they're not.
Just to reaffirm it, the American Pitbull Terrier is the dog Petey from Little Rascals.
Right.
For that dog to sit there and be pulled and dressed, and that's what kind of dog they are. If you tell them to sit and stay, if you say the word, you know, if you say the president's name, followed by the vice president's name, then with the secretary of defense, you know, then he kills. But, you know, but they like to please you and stuff like that. So it's a, right, Gonzo, you're such a big boy. But what else do we got? We got the lawyers of the GOP going and getting Palin's clothes back.
Oh, don't you love that? They're sending an audit team to Alaska. This really is that moment we've been talking about, Albert. They've taken the tiara away. Let's see, we've got... we'll need to talk to your husband, please, ma'am. Todd! Bring back the Brooks Brothers suit. They want it back. Don't you know?
And you know what we never saw? Everybody kind of forgot about this, but I was like, hey... Where's her medical records?
Never came out. Just had a letter from her doctor. Yeah, it was like Welcome Back, Carter. You know, Epstein's mom. It just said Sarah's doctor.
Yeah.
Perfectly healthy, perfectly sane. She's never taken an antidepressant or adopted somebody else's baby from a hospital in near Wasilla. No, never did that.
No, never. I just think that's, you know, one of those funny little, I just had to just remember that. Hey, didn't you promise me? Oh, that's right. You're so full of it. You can't even freaking, I don't know how these people move. Oh, you know, I guess it's no guilt. You know, I guess there must be some sort of mind out there that just, you know, doesn't feel guilt for saying things like that and hanging nooses in trees. And
there is. And all you have to do is participate in fundamentalist religion for the better part of your life, and you can have that mind too, Albert.
Amen. And, you know, fear is the mind killer, and that's what kind of mind...
You know, you can wake up every morning wondering if you're going to be gay today, and your marriage is going to just collapse in some sort of riotous orgy. Because that's them. They have to decide every morning whether or not they're gay. Because it's a choice for them.
What a hell that would be to live like that.
Yeah.
What kind of hell is that? I mean,
you can almost see Todd Palin waking up in the morning, coming into the kitchen for his coffee, whistling show tunes, and Sarah looking at him going, "No, not today, Todd! Our marriage has ended." Sorry. That was bad.
Oh, that was bad. Ugh. He did wear that little face paint, though, so maybe. You always got to
worry. Todd! Sorry, you know, there's a time coming when I don't have to do that anymore. And you know, you reminded me. I got a cool email earlier from our buddy Marty earlier in the day, based on something that I said last night, and that is that there is a day coming soon when I would be able to modify the language and never use phrases like that little pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout, or say George Bush's name, or any of that stuff. And he did write in, and he said, there's one way you should hope that you'll be able to speak the name of GW the way you've been since I've been listening to the horn, while recapping the day's happenings at the war crimes trials in The Hague.
I like that.
I like that a lot. I also like his suggestion for Attorney General. Marty wants Elizabeth de la Vega.
Wait. She's somewhere in my periphery. Just refresh me. There's too many people. I'm bad with names.
Oh, she's a former U.S. attorney, and she outlined the case against George Bush. You know, indicting George Bush.
Oh, she was the first one, wasn't she? Right, she's the first one that read Vincent Bugliosi. I can't get the Italian G out anymore today, but I've been
Bugliosi.
Yeah, Bugliosi.
Bugliosi.
Yeah, Bugly. Yeah, I can say the Midwest G. I can't roll it today.
Yeah. She's the author of The United States versus George W. Bush, et al.
I tell you what, I'd like to see him win a position too. Not for nothing. I mean, he's a conservative. Tell you what, that guy's no nonsense.
Oh yeah, and that's one of the. I don't know how that attorney general race in Vermont went, but they were vowing to indict George Bush if that attorney and appoint Vincent Bugliosi to be the special prosecutor if she won. So I guess it didn't happen because I haven't seen any big announcements coming across the wire.
Well, I'll just tell you, we're just gonna have to make sure he does not leave the country. You know, we don't need any kind of embarrassment. We don't need a Pinochet. You know, and I'm not trying to.
Mr. Bush will be needing that passport.
Yeah, kinda.
Because I guess the president have to have a passport? I don't know.
It'd be nice if part of the responsibility is lose it. I think they might lose it, but for a minute. I mean, I just got to say this because all that that plastic insulation that was put up in terms of the economy. Remember, it's rallying. Well, we all know what kind of thing we're talking about here. And now we're talking about GM completely going bye-bye. And I keep hearing these people say, it's too big to fail. And what we've been talking about here is if it's too big to fail, it's too big to exist. And while I happen to agree with some of the naysayers where they say, it'll be cheaper for the American people to bail out GM or Ford or whomever than it would be to let them fail. And that's when I say, man, you can only see for the real short term. How can bumping up a business that requires people, I mean, how many new vehicles do they make a month? You know, like back in the day when Ford and GM and this and that and whomever were first making vehicles, nobody had them. You could see all this exponential growth and the models change really fast and all this other stuff. But, nowadays you think these vehicles, especially with the price that they cost, they should last a little bit. If you got all these sensors.
But Albert, that was part of the creation of the middle class. Once they created the middle class, then they created the idea that you had to have a new car every 5 years.
Well, and that's the lease, and trust me, I've sold them. I know how that racket is, okay? But what I got to say is one of those things about doing it is it's not sustainable.
And there it is. It is not a sustainable business model.
Exactly. And I'm not trying to say that these plants and the jobs aren't sustainable, or even the pension funds. No. What they're making is not sustainable. Like when they're sitting there pumping out Hummer after Hummer after Hummer, when we have long known that gas is going to peak one day, and we're going to sit here and run into all sorts of trouble. And all of a sudden, all these goons after 2001, no, let's go get a Hummer! Screw these Arabs! We're going to drink all their blood and suck all their gas.
Yeah, but why did we not see this? Some of us did. Why didn't we see this coming? Because you got to remember, all during the 60s, there's little old Volkswagen over in Germany, selling Beetle after Beetle after Beetle after Beetle. And then one day, Ford looked up and went, well, bless my soul, they done sold more Beetles than we ever made Model Ts. How you like that? Yeah. Make some more land yachts. Crank up the line on the lead sleds, would you? We need some more Mavericks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, that's
but really, that's it. So all during the 60s, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to run over you. All during the 60s, you get, you know, these, I mean, the first car I remember riding around in was a 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan, okay? It still had a little bit of a fin on it, even. A beautiful car. Big old, you know, 404 four-barrel, dear God in heaven, and you could flip the breather on the carburetor, and just, and you could hear the carbs going, making those Hannibal Lecter noises. But all that time they're making these things, and there's Germany and Japan quietly building these little economical cars. I think I saw my first Datsun maybe when I was in 1968, 69, and we all just said, and it was when we had come up here to visit relatives, and we all just stood around there looking at, what in the hell is that? That's tiny.
Yeah.
And so that's,
you're gonna die in an accident with that.
Yep, that's right. I wouldn't ever. You know, I don't want to drive around with the gas tank in my lap. So I heard,
universal.
Yeah. So the first oil crisis hits, what, 1973? And there's Detroit going,
Uh-oh.
How about that? Maybe we, and some wise people, fairly intelligent people said, you know, maybe it's time to back off on the lead sled production a little bit and give people a choice that'll get them some lower gas mileage. So how did Detroit respond? They gave us the Vega, the Gremlin, and the Pinto.
And the Maverick.
And if you were hardcore, you could get an AMC Matador. No, the AMC Javelin. That was the hot stuff. Yeah. I remember those.
But they're looking at them again, though, because if you think about it, Germany still is one of the better manufacturing centers of the world. They still have manufacturing in Germany. Not us. Japan, well, they may have a lot of factories in this country. But, you know, if you sit there, you know, in terms of Toyota, Toyota sells more vehicles than all the other big three. Toyota is now the number one, aren't they? And I'm sure Honda's not too far behind. And, you know, like, these guys, they make...
Yeah, I've got a confession to make. As Japanese cars go, I'm a Nissan guy. I really am.
My mom loves the Nissans, too.
That new Maxima is just sexy, as sedans go. You can get a you can still get a German made Volkswagen, and when you get one of those, mm-hmm. They're just, I'm a German car freak. I'm just very, very bad about that. I'm a Deutschophile where cars are concerned.
I like my German cars.
Yeah, I like me some German engineering. But would somebody please tell me what the hell Volkswagen was thinking with this advertising? Okay, but I'm talking about it, so that must be, I mean, it's marginally successful. What was this advertising campaign with Brooke Shields? Don't have a baby so you can get a Volkswagen. What? Where's the marketing genius what's the hook? I mean, huh? Volkswagen's making a minivan now, so they get Brooke Shields to come out and say, don't have a baby just so you can get a Volkswagen? I feel like they dropped, you know, I watch that thing and I feel like they dropped me on my head at the same time he dropped Barney.
Well, maybe they'll put a diesel engine in it. And you know how good that Volkswagen and Audi and all those other guys.
Oh,
really Audi.
Oh. Yeah, that 1.8 1.8 liter turbocharged diesel. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's the Mercedes-Benz five-cylinder diesel, and that, you know, that's a 750,000-mile engine. Be driving along. Go ahead.
Exactly. That, isn't that something? I mean, I don't know, Bob. If we're making something, I mean, I know everybody starts out really good at the beginning, but if you're going to make something and take some pride in a heritage, make something that's not a pile of crap. I mean, if American technology becomes the laughing stock, now we have other types of high technology. We can kill you 10 ways from Sunday, but the cars are kind of, it's going to take us 20 more years to get 40 miles to the gallon. And we're sitting here losing our industry and infrastructure as people are, as you've been saying and echoing for years, hey, watch out, we're going to lose this, we can't lose this, Bush is selling us out. And here we go now, and now today is the day of reckoning, you know.
And where's the headline, Albert? Barack Obama killed General Motors.
That's fine.
I've already seen the stuff on the internet, in the news reporting. The market is responding to the election of Barack Obama by going in the tank. Does anybody believe that? I mean, didn't I see a 900-point gain and a 900-point drop just a couple of weeks ago? I mean,
The market has nothing to do with it. That is so. The reason the market's falling is not what happens day to day. Like, we're way past that point now. Like, now we're at the point where the Lego blocks have way too much weight on them. They're barely being held up by the crumbled blocks that are rubble from before. And they just keep slipping and sliding. I mean, it just keeps collapsing and further and collapsing, like dry sand, you know. And it doesn't take much to – it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter what Barack Obama does. It's going to get to a point where all this waste that we've been doing comes back to get us. All this – eventually, Bob, we can't sit there and go on Coke binges for 20 years and then expect to come out looking like Brooke Shields at 20. We're going to wind up looking like Keith Richards, okay?
Or Mickey Rourke. Yeah, I didn't think there was a human being on Earth that looked worse than Keith Richards. Mickey Rourke.
And Rudy Giuliani in drag. But when we sit here with these cretins of industry, and they tell us that we can't allow these things to fail. Now that's when it tells you it's time for a little socializing of those factories, and maybe sometimes it's like, you know, those solar panels by the way that I told you about, my library, they're completely on, everything's on. It took a day, day and a half maybe. Seriously, I mean, it's a big roof of a library. It's a good, you know, I don't even know. It's probably a good almost 100 by 50 area, you know, and so it's a pretty fairly large roof, and it was one guy doing it, and he might have got some help to help him load them up. All he did was put the brackets on, then you basically connect. If you can connect the plug like an extension cord, you can hook the solar panels up together so they form a, you know, circuit, and then you got to plug it in the box. That might take a little longer, but that didn't take no time at all. Now what we need is, instead of manufacturing these things in Taiwan, we should start manufacturing them here, right? But that the nanotechnology that you were talking about yesterday, and that black silicone that I talked about a while ago,
right,
and put those things together, and, you know, let's start doing it. Let's put the people in Janesville, Wisconsin, that are losing their jobs. Okay, let's put the, like, because they're closing that factory, completely closed, gone, because they're not going to be selling anymore. They're losing all the money on selling all these trucks. Well, what do you expect when all you do is sell these giant trucks that get 11 to 12 miles to the gallon if you're freaking lucky? And, you know, and don't tell me about when you got 16 towing a thing up a hill with a front wind. I don't want to hear it, because 16 sucks, okay? But, you know, when we're sitting in that kind of range, sub-20s, and with how many people and trucks that we're selling like hotcakes, it's unbelievable the amount of people that, I mean, even here I live in farm world. And there's a lot of dudes out here that have trucks that don't need them. And don't get me wrong, a truck is a handy thing to have. But, oh, just driving around, you know, for no reason, just sucking up gas. And, you know, you, one person doing it, okay, 100, you know, 100,000, 200,000, 3 million, 5 million people doing it, 5 million people doing anything is a lot, right? So if they're sitting there sucking this gas down like this, and we're sitting here not even, now we can't even make them, and now everybody's stuck with it. Oh, it's just not sustainable, and it's a cancer. It's just a cancer of capitalism. And it's like one of these things that if we're going to sit here and utilize some sort of capitalistic system, well, we cannot continue, like, you know, hit the reset button and start again like it was 1910, and we can start all over. You know, even with the new technology that comes out, we can't have that same mindset. We can't have a 19th and 20th century mindset anymore. Like, you know, I mean, it was actually, if you ever heard some of the confessions of the former Goodyear CEO, and he talked about in terms of being a pirate of the earth. And, you know, instead of being a steward of the earth, if you listen to some of the guys, some of the insight that he had once, you know, the wool was pulled over his eyes, you know, he painted out a much more tangible and much more safer looking path to go down to in terms of humanity than this current crap. You know, I mean, I honestly understand people's jobs are at stake. But you know what? They say, oh, GM is in trouble. Good.
Albert, you're talking about larger problems, I think.
It is.
Because
GM is not, go ahead.
GM is not a religion, it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And if it had been run a little bit more like a business than a religion, if, for instance, GM's executives had taken Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations to heart and actually shared the risk with their workers, instead of the gabooly billion bonuses and whatnot that they've gotten, instead of rolling out Vegas and Pintos and Fiestas, and I'm not gooning on small cars, I'm gooning on small bad cars, okay? Then they wouldn't be in these, they wouldn't be in these straits. If they hadn't designed cars to crap out after 5 years, they wouldn't be in these straits. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they still build, I mean, there's some beautiful, you know, look, as far as a big old sedan goes, and I have to take things like this into consideration, because I got a big family.
Yeah, you do.
I can't fit my family in a four-seater. Yes, we made a conscious decision to have a large family, but that's kind of neither here nor there. But for instance, the car that so many law enforcement agencies use. The Ford Crown Victoria. That sucker will pull down nearly 29 miles a gallon on the open highway. And it's got an engine in it that'll get out of its own way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, you don't find anybody running, very many people running to the lot going, well, I'm going to buy me a new Crown Vic. That's a sexy looking car. It's the form over function thing taken to a radical, disproportionate, irrational level. But you know what I was saying though is that you're right. There's no such thing as too big to fail. There's too stupidly run to survive. But we could road trip down to the place where I was born and raised. And I could take you down to down near the river and show you the big grass covered, scrub brush covered place that used to be the Florence Wagon Works. We've sent wagons across America, and nobody hated Henry Ford more than the folks at the Florence Wagon Works, because they had a right to build wagons. And it's the argument that gets made here in this state. Well, we got a right to mine coal. What about the jobs? You know, don't blame me who actually has his daggum eyes open about how poisonous coal is. Don't blame me for pointing it out. Ask the people that you've been electing why it is that that's the only thing we've got in the way of an economy. We've got a slave economy in this state.
That's why, I just got to say it, that's why GM needs to die. That's why coal mining needs to die. It needs to die. We need to let it die. We need to dig a hole. We need to put it in and be buried. Because there's one thing about nature, right? Nature, you know, is a micro, macro constantly. I mean, even in our own, artificial systems, we wind up seeing a lot of nature's laws reflected back. Okay. What is the one thing nature abhors? It's a famous statement. Nature abhors
a vacuum.
Exactly.
Even an auric vacuum.
Gone, maybe Tesla will rise up and take their place. Maybe Toyota will say, wow, we better make better different vehicles than that, and we better sit here and make it so it's a sustainable thing. Man, we better get our butts out into space.
Hey, welcome to capitalism. If there's anything to be had in General Motors, Toyota can buy it.
Yeah.
If they want it.
Heck, the best thing General Motors has is their failure, and that's free. Well, I mean
Anheuser-Busch, there's no doubt, you know, those people can make some beer, but this this W. Bush wannabe, what's his name? August A. Bush the Fourth. He's my age. He's a moron. I mean, he really is. He's George W. Bush with a beer fortune, and he ran the company into the ground. And now, you know, now it's been bought by the Belgazillions. You know, InBev, run by Belgian, Brazilian. I call it Belgazillions. And they're going, you know, and it'll
make it here, though, too.
It'll take off. It'll be fine. But there was a lot. There was a lot of weeping and wailing, gnashing of teeth, and rending of garments, and sitting in sackcloth and ashes in St. Louis. Oh, we're being bought by the foreigners. Well, don't complain about the market doing what the market does. Ask the dumbass who made it possible for that to happen why it happened. Somebody call the CEO of GM in and ask him why he's in trouble.
Oh, no, the accountants just told me.
Yeah. It's because they're dinosaurs.
You know, why was Chrysler such a big stinker that Mercedes-Benz, who spent a fortune buying them, sold them off to a private equity firm? Well, go look at the Dodge Charger. Great big hemi-headed engine. You know, it'll smoke tires with an automatic transmission. That's tough. And it's the one thing we don't need.
Yeah, exactly. They're dinosaurs. They're going to go extinct, and they should be. You know, we should preserve their husks in museums and teach future generations this is not how to behave, because it's not a sustain. I mean, I don't want to curse my head off, Bob, but this is, I mean, I'm trying to stay calm here, but this barely lasted 100 years.
Oh, I know.
And bear in mind,
Albert, these things, there's that vacuum again. These things don't happen in a vacuum either. And it's not just nutty that GM is having all these troubles at the same time that the People's Republic of China is about to start dumping $9,000 automobiles built by slaves on us. I mean, that's the next couple of years, if not this year.
Way.
And you know, they're not going to be little electric genius cars. They're just going to be really simple, fold up in an accident, accordion style automobiles that people will actually be able to afford.
With lead paint.
Sure, and you know, poison seat cushions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness gracious!
You got them all lit up again, Albert. I'm going to roll along, see if I can hit some of these.
All right, brother.
All right.
All right, get them all.
Okay.
Take care. Bye.
Bye now. I tell you what, I love it when I get to play DJ. I actually had a request. So we're going to have a little song moment here in a sec. And we're going to do that as a sort of, call it a sort of exhale break. Because I've just gotten word from Australia that the racism is rearing its ugly head there. With little caricatured money images going around with a black-faced Obama on dollar bills and such. Sickening. Just sickening. You know, there's nothing new under the sun, and there's nothing that says we own racism. It would seem to be that anywhere there are white people, there are people who think that darker people than them are inferior. How did that happen? Oh, wait, we had all the guns and germs and steel. Thank you, Jared Diamond. I remember now. So a little break and we'll come back for the third hour. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, the rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow. Bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert. Dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd. Scratch my itch like a needle on the record. Full of life like a man going to Mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring. Baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning. Morning, morning. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Call for backup and I give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and you're underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim and not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system. To legalize you or give you your freedom. You want rights, ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns are still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by Bang and Testarossa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in a stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yeah, just a little mental health break there. That was nice. Thank you, Agnes. Okay, let's go to the phones. You guys have got them lit up, and I hope you're all still there. Kind of hard to tell. But let's do go to the phones. We'll start out from Cold River Mountain Watch. Our buddy, Rory McElmoyle, is with us. Hey, Rory.
Hey, bud.
What's going on, man?
Not much. Your filmmakers just left.
Oh, cool. Well, I was about to worry about them.
They decided to stick around. They were up in Caverick for a while.
So. Oh, cool. That was wonderful, wonderful. Great folks, too, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're really good people.
And, yeah, we've been having fun. I've never had the show taped or anything. I've never been a movie star.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to make it, Bob. They're going to try. They're going to try to get down there, but... I'm sure they'll
Well, no, we've been shooting in the studio since Election Day.
Oh, shoot. I didn't know that. Good deal.
Yeah, it's been really, really cool. Let me run something past you real quick, Roy.
Yep.
How about a little political philosophizing here?
All right.
you've seen the story, I assume, suggesting that Robert Kennedy Jr. might be named head of the EPA.
Sure have.
And I don't know about you, but that just tickles me pink.
Ah, it's awesome, man. It's awesome. I was hoping it'd be something good like that. I was thinking it might be Gore or somebody else, but having Kennedy up there at the top of the list is pretty spectacular.
Well, okay, here's where me actually attempting to think comes in. During the election, I was quite bothered by the fact that Obama was having what I considered more than a healthy relationship with people like Jay Rockefeller and Nick Rahal, and all their clean coal BS.
Mm-hmm.
And I railed against it. But I've come to the conclusion, Rory, that Obama may actually be the master of the Jedi mind trick. You know, Obama won Kenobi.
Yeah. Well, we're just talking about this down here, is that, you know, he's Obama's not a dumb person, obviously.
Oh, no.
And he's been talking to Gore. He's been talking to Kennedy. He's mentioned that he's against mountaintop removal. He's mentioned that he knows that the Bush administration basically just raped, excuse me for the term, the environmental regulations that protected people's health and environmental resources. So he's not a dumb man. And so he's got to know that clean coal doesn't address all aspects of coal.
To the extent that it even exists. Well, here's where the Jedi mind trick comes in. West Virginia obviously went for McCain for whatever inexplicable reasons.
Yep.
But after having been squired around coal country, Rahal, Mollahan, Byrd, Rockefeller, all these coal cheerleaders, they didn't deliver. He doesn't owe them squat.
Yep.
So he can put a Bobby Kennedy Jr. at the head of the EPA, and all Bobby's got to do is come in and say, hey, boys, we're actually going to enforce the Clean Water Act.
Yep.
Party's over. Indictment's coming soon.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that they were part of, you know, they're the Democrats, and they're pretty powerful Democrats, and he did need their, apparently sort of needed their support, especially in this region. But you're right. It obviously didn't work, you know, and they're gonna keep on them to try to keep supporting coal, and you know, there will obviously be a transition, but let's just hope it's a 10-year transition completely away from coal. And I just think, you know, you didn't see Obama talking about clean coal in California. You didn't see him say clean coal in Florida. He didn't even say clean coal at a rally in Roanoke, Virginia, which is, he even had Rick Boucher, one of the biggest coal whores in the whole on the whole East Coast, introduce them for that rally. So they only said it in the places where they absolutely had to, and they only said it on the stages where they absolutely had to, when the debates that, you know, they were on were being funded by the Clean Coal Coalition. So
exactly. But that gives me hope.
Yeah, gives me a lot of hope too. And I mean, but it's hope that, you and I and a lot of other people, you know, we were wary of him saying clean coal. We weren't sure whether it was just a campaign thing. But the fact that he's looking at Robert Kennedy to head the EPA just kind of, you know, like, for me, it was a huge just breath of relief. You know, like, that huge chip on my shoulder, the last chip that I had for Obama is gone now, so.
Yeah, and it's about the hope again. Exactly.
Yep, about the hope again.
Well, let me ask you, because some questions have been rolling around, the stream buffer zone rule, the permanency that George Bush wants to run through while he's stealing the silver on the way out of the White House,
mm-hmm.
Can he get that done before January 20th?
You know, that's a hard one to tell. I mean, I think that there's a lot of public pressure against it, and they might have started moving forward with it too late, but you never know. I mean, I think he still has till January 20th, and even if they go through, if they get a 30-day comment period, then that still gives them plenty of time to pass the rule. And it all depends on what type of influence the transitional government has, you know, like because Obama's going to have power over the next few months. He's going to have some influence over what Bush is doing.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that bothers me, Rory, is I know how Bushes behave on the way out.
Yeah.
When his daddy was leaving, he handed Bill Clinton a nifty little war in Somalia and said, I've underfunded and under-equipped the troops. Do with it the best you can. And the next thing you know, you got a bunch of right-wingers out there screaming on the radio, oh, Bill Clinton's having our soldiers' bodies dragged through the streets in Somalia.
Yeah.
When it was HW who didn't send them with what they needed to do the mission.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's the way that Bushes behave on the way out. And but for the 74 days remaining, Rory, I wouldn't trust that man with a dead skunk.
Yeah, well, it's going to come down to the wire. I mean, it's going to come down to the wire on the stream buffer zone rule. It's going to come down to the wire on toxics, like mercury limits. There's so many different things that Bush is trying to just get rid of, you know, and unfortunately, he's handing Obama two wars. He's handing Obama a financial meltdown, you know, and at the same time, then he's going to hand him all the other things that unfortunately in this country are seen as minor issues, but to many people and to obviously like the animals and the habitat and the water are major issues. And those are unfortunately the ones that are going to be looked at after all the biggies are taken care of. And so it is scary just because those aren't going to be the top priorities, unfortunately. Stream buffer zone rules should be, but it's not going to be. Because
well, that's where we come in, isn't it?
That's where we come in, exactly.
We've got to make it top priorities,
and that's what Kennedy would do, and I think that's probably the most hopeful thing about it. He's going to make sure that Obama knows that these things need to be taken care of right now.
Well, I tell you, and so the more we keep up the pressure, the better off we are.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you can't do much better than 45,000 comments. And then another 5 or 10,000 when we have to redo it. That's pretty damn good amount of pressure.
Yeah, and those 45,000 comments were, you know, that wasn't 22,500 saying, oh, yes, do this, and 22,500 saying, oh, hell no.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
That's like 45,000, oh, hell no.
Yep.
With very few exceptions.
Yep. And then you had another 45,000 oh hell no's for the Wise County Dominion plant.
Well, that yes.
So that's pretty huge too.
Well, I'm hoping I've been trying to tell people, Rory, that you know we had our little celebration. Now coffee breaks over, back on your heads, because this is when the work starts. I doubt if there's anybody down there in the office there or any of the other environmental movements here in West Virginia or anywhere else in the nation who are saying, well, our work is done here. We can go home.
That's right.
Because this is when the work begins.
And that's the beautiful thing about it is like this is, you know, you go to work on November 3rd and you've got all this work, you know, that you got to do. But you're facing like a sense of impossibility, you know, a sense of fate that is not, you know, a sense of bleakness. But then you wake up on November 5th and you have to do the same amount of work. You have to do more work, but now you're energized. You know, and that's how people here down in the office feel. That's how people, all my friends in D.C. feel. So that's where the major change is, because now we're like, well, now the work's worth it even more because we feel like there's a chance that we're going to win.
Yeah, it's the difference between battling back against ignorant morons and, at the very worst, having to educate the educable.
Yep.
This is the education phase, I think. Well, let me ask you, where's the wind project standing these days?
Because
I mean, Obama's talked a lot about sustainable energy and stuff like that. I mean, this has got to be, you know, you don't get.
We're sort of facing the same time frame, you know. If we are able to hold off Massey until Kennedy and Obama are able to do something about mountaintop removal, then, you know, that's going to basically give us a win on this campaign. But at the same time, we have to keep up the fight. We have to be able to keep the public pressure on so that, you know, Manchin's thinking twice. You know, he's thinking twice about whether or not he actually wants to be seen as a governor who allowed a destruction of the mountain when there was a wonderful alternative that was a better choice for the mountain, for all obvious reasons and then some. So, but, you know, we had the rally, and we've had some good media. We had CNN since then. CNN did their piece. Vicky Wolf of the AP article all over the nation. And we've come back together and come up with another strategy. And one big thing is at the end of the month we'll have downstream strategies. We'll be finishing their report that basically legitimizes from a professional research organization everything that we've been saying. And even more. Every time I talk to them, they're telling me different things that they add into the study. For one example, sorry, I'm going really fast here, but I'm.
That's okay.
Their study is really exciting, Bob. And they, so without even asking them, they added in an analysis. They're doing a scenario where, a wind production facility would be sited in the Coal River Valley. And they looked at all the economic benefits that would bring to the area under that scenario, which, really strengthens our argument because, you know, if you have 220 turbines going on a mountain, it does make sense for the wind company to put a manufacturing plant right here, especially if it's Gamesa, because they're looking at doing a 60-megawatt wind farm in McDowell County. So wind farms are going to be popping up in the coal fields, and that's going to be a beautiful thing. But
well, it's literally a vision of the future, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, the sad thing is that West Virginia did not jump on this earlier. Pennsylvania got a wind turbine manufacturing plant that is employing 1,000 people right now. And it's a huge boost to the local economy and to the state economy. And they did it by passing a renewable portfolio standard. And West Virginia hasn't jumped on that bandwagon, you know. So it creates that sense of...
Think that might go on the legislative agenda for this winter?
Say that again?
Think that might go on the legislative agenda for this winter, that renewability portfolio?
Well, the West Virginia Environmental Council is pushing for that. And there's even Manchin's Public Energy Authority has been exploring that. So hopefully we'll see that.
That's a beautiful thing. You know, I love the irony. I've mentioned a number of times on the show that story from a couple of weeks ago where a guy in California has invented a wind turbine that's vertical and goes on building rooftops.
Yeah.
And they're manufacturing, and the irony just jumped all over me, Rory. They're manufacturing this thing in an old windmill factory, 100-year-old windmill factory in Nebraska.
No way.
You know, this isn't new Star Wars technology. I mean, the advances are, but the idea of using wind is virtually as old as the human enterprise itself.
Yep.
Whether you're talking about, you know, draining the lowlands in the Netherlands, or whether you're talking about the power of wind to send ships around the globe.
Yep.
There's nothing new or alien about all this, no matter how hard the coal thugs, the coal mafia, tries to make it appear that way. And, you know, I got to admit, Rory, they've had some success. I've run across people who have told me, well, you know, I'm sure there's room in West Virginia for your little wind project, but coal is really all we have.
Yeah, and they're being proved wrong.
Yeah.
They're being proved wrong. And you know who said, who Nick Regalado said, you know, put that whole, we've been using wind forever. message in it, like, as beautifully as I've seen it. And it's true. It's almost like we totally regressed during the industrial era. They had been using wind power for all sorts of things up until America went through the whole steel boom, and coal became this huge engine of economic growth. And we totally forgot about wind. And now it's coming back, you know, and it's coming back because coal is basically killing itself, you know, as it's killing other people. It's killing itself. And they have for decades tried to fight back against doing anything to clean up their act. And that's why they're facing such opposition today. But,
I never thought I would see the day that I would find a reason to say that I'm glad West Virginia voted the way it did in the general election. But this time through, I think it actually winds up working to our benefit.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
Because, you know, you talk about the jobs that can happen as a result of moving toward wind power and the associated technologies. That, you know, that's one of the things that the coal mafia has always been very, very good at, and that is that saying, there's only X number, X thousand miners, but those X thousand miners make it possible for a man to have a job slicing bologna in the grocery store.
Yep.
Well, the same thing can be said about the arrival of any industry.
Yep.
And frankly, if the guy who works building the wind turbines or maintaining the wind turbines actually lives a longer and more meaningful life, that makes it more likely that the guy's going to have the job slice in the bologna longer. Because we all know what coal does when they leave. They pack their bags, they leave a filthy mess, and except for the filthy mess, it's like they were never there. Oh, you over there slicing the bologna? Screw you! We're out of here, buddy.
And I hope West Virginia wakes up soon and realizes that the coal companies aren't going to stick around once the coal's gone and say, okay, now how can we help?
Yeah, there's not going to be any retraining for the guys up there running those D9 dozers to turn them into philosophy professors or anything.
No, not at all. That's why we need the state to step in and really get behind, you know, green jobs, renewable energy, because they're the ones who can create training programs and put money into training programs and education programs and policies.
Do what government's supposed to do for we the people?
Uh-huh.
As opposed to we the coal companies?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Hey, Rory, it's great talking to you, brother.
Hey, you too, man. And I wanted to, before we get off.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I don't know if Kerry Huffman called.
No, I haven't heard from Kerry yet, but I know him and I look forward to it.
Well, I told Kerry I'd do this, so let me introduce to your listeners so there's been a lot of talk on your show, much appreciated talk about the Colorado Mountain Wind campaign, but not only is wind power spreading in the national consciousness, campaigns like the Colorado Mountain Wind campaign and other movements starting for green jobs in West Virginia have inspired folks in Fayette County down in Anstead, the Anstead Historical Preservation Council,
of which I am a member,
going to start their own wind campaign for Golly Mountain.
Yeah,
they're facing mountaintop removal just like folks in the Colorado Valley were, and so Kerry Huffman and them are they're really moving fast, and it's a beautiful thing because it's showing that communities want wind power. They want something different other than having their homes blown up.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the beautiful things about the Fayette County campaign is that we have something that other communities don't have. We have a county commission here in Fayette County that's actually gone on the record opposing the mountaintop removing going on smack dab on top of the New River Gorge National Recreation Area. We've actually got a little bit of government cooperation going for us.
Yep. You even have Ray Hall looking at it.
And he's kind of got to because the New River Gorge National River and the Gauley River Recreation Area, those are both jewels in his crown. Those are there's no legacy in having a gob pile or a sludge dam or 10,000 poisoned acres. There's no legacy in that, but there's a legacy in protecting and preserving the wild spaces that still exist in this state. And he's got to take a hard look at that.
Well, you know, the beautiful thing is, again, like I said, the coal industry eats itself. And by blowing up mountains and threatening and poisoning communities, they have pushed communities to look at what else there is and to create campaigns such as the Golly Mountain or the Colorado Mountain Wind campaign. And as folks are looking at that, they're realizing that there actually is something different that could be done. Because, you know, nobody was looking at Golly Mountain until Kerry Huffman and the Historical Preservation Council said, well, let's see if there's wind potential here, and it turns out that there is. So, you know, that's another exciting thing about it, besides the fact that this is spreading and more communities are getting energized about green jobs and renewable energy.
Man, it's like Michael Franti said, let the flowers bloom.
That's right.
You know,
I was going to say that right when I got on the right when I, every flower has got a right to be blooming.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's well, right. Rory, I tell you what, we'll be focusing more on what's going on here through the efforts of the Anstead Historic Preservation Council, because among other things, that's my backyard.
Yeah.
You know, we've had the windows shake here from the blasting already, and I damned well don't appreciate it.
Nope.
And that's that's one of the things that I said to some of the gang down there, down in Whitesville, is that, you know, one of the things that makes me so proud to have had this affiliation with the organization for so long is that I got educated real fast that and the first thing that was said is, just because it's happening here now, don't think it won't happen somewhere else later. Mm-hmm. Because they want it all. And so now we're seeing that come to fruition. But I've got 4 years of education under my belt, thanks to the hard work of folks like Judy and Patty and you and Nanette and Lorella and Nick and Vernon. Everybody that works there works on these things. Sarah.
One of the originals, Janice Neese.
Yeah, and Janice, yeah, the original. All of the hard work pays off in simply remaining and being unmovable and continuing to put the information out, because that's how the minds and the hearts change. Is, you know, you have to appeal to the brain, but you also have to make it real to the heart. And those two things have been done in beautiful tandem by Coal River Mountain Watch. And now that people are beginning to get active in the Golly Mountain campaign, we've got some hope. We've got some hope. Now, personally, I think strategically, what's got to happen is we got to bring the tourism industry on board.
That's right.
And that may be a bit of a struggle, but by God, it's a struggle. It's a fight worth having.
You bet.
Rory, take care. Good to hear from you. Don't be a stranger, all right?
And Bob, folks, everybody needs folks like you to spread the word, so thanks for doing what you do, Bob.
Yeah, it's a joy and a pleasure and an honor, my friend.
You bet.
All right, bye now.
Take care, Bob.
Rory McElmoyle from Coal River Mountain Watch. He's done a lot of the grueling number work and the coordination, putting together the facts and figures that show that wind is a reality. The possibility of wind, sustainable power, is not only a possibility but a likelihood, almost a certainty, if only people in this region will get behind it. And that's the work of the angels. That's hero stuff. Let's keep things rolling, see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good. What's up?
Not a lot. Well, actually, a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah?
Well, let's see. You wanted me to call back and give you the report. I will tell you that in the Battle of Two Parkers, that Parker Griffith came out on top.
Yeah, the Democrat there in Northwest Alabama.
Yes, the 5th District, Congressional District in Alabama. He had a contest between Mr. Parker Griffith, Democrat, respected doctor, oncologist, versus a Lone Parker. And I'm not really sure what he's done for a living most of his life, but he sure is a Republican, and he wants to undo big government, including NASA. And it was a close call, but the last boxes came out of Huntsville, where everybody has supported their jobs all belong to Redstone Arsenal. So they said, you know what, we're not going to vote for that guy that wants to get rid of our jobs. So, yeah, it turns out that when you live in a state that relies, that has always called itself the Cotton State, but actually relies more on federal contract money than cotton or its income, it turns out that being anti-government doesn't always get you elected. It's
and
not
that's
an automatic way to get elected.
That's we keep talking about these causes for hope, Matt. That's
yes.
Another one of them. And you know, not all big government. And I know there's a lot of people with a lot of beefs with NASA, and I could probably tick them off on my fingers myself. But
I can give you beefs with NASA, but go ahead.
Well, you know, the militarization of space and stuff, the BS on that.
Right.
It was mentioned. I think it was our buddy Albert last night said, you know, let's create a if you got to do anything, commercialize it. Don't weaponize space. You know, use it for good. And you know, I'm of a certain age, and one of my first toys was a space helmet, and I get a little you know, misty eyed when I start talking about the possibilities of space, and I don't like it so much. When liberals and folks on my side of the argument, our side of the argument, start saying, well, you know, we need to feed the people before we send rockets up. Well, some of the times we learned a little bit more about feeding people when we send the rockets up.
We do.
So, you know, I've got a soft spot for NASA. I just do.
When you consider that, you know, the moonshot, okay, which you were lucky enough to live through. You got to watch that on TV. Think about that. You got to watch that on TV. You got to watch the Berlin Wall fall, and now you've gotten to see Barack Obama get elected president. You're the luckiest man I know.
That's pretty damn close. Of course, I was a little young to realize what I was watching when they blew JFK away. But, that goes on the negative side. But we're still plus. We're still up two.
We're still up two. But you realize that when we talk about the moonshot, we're talking about a billion-dollar government program, which at the time, you know, $50 billion was real money. And we're talking about this giant government program. People weren't really convinced that it was going to benefit them all that much. But in the process of the moonshot, NASA came up with technologies you use every day now. Things that you depend on for your safety and well-being.
Digital photography.
Digital photography. Well, actually, that was invented for spy satellites. But you get point.
Yeah.
All this technology that came out of the space race is background noise to us now. We don't appreciate it. And just imagine if your next moonshot is green energy. Just imagine building a power grid, a new power grid for America, green energy. You know, mountaintop turbines, that sort of thing.
That's why the organization, Matt, that's pushing so much of this calls itself the Apollo Alliance.
Exactly.
I like that organization a lot.
That's a great organization, and they chose exactly the right name because it lands them right away. And I think, you know, looking back on it, we've all seen Apollo 13, the movie now. And I think that people are beginning to appreciate what these massive projects do. They never do in their own time, but later they come to understand what they meant.
Yeah, and the signature line, and after 8 years of George Bush, we darn sure understand the signature line from that movie. Houston,
oh, yes. Houston,
we have a problem. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I have to say this. I've been paying attention to the transition noise. You know, Rahm Emanuel has accepted the post, and they're talking about they picked a new press secretary.
And I kind of liked that guy. Did you see the clip of what he did to Hannity?
Oh, I love what he did to Hannity.
With the guilt by association stuff? Yeah, I remember when it happened, but it was beautiful watching it the second time around. That guy, the one who told Hannity that he was an anti-Semite by association when Hannity tried to bring up William Ayers.
See, that guy I really like. I like who Obama's picking. He's picking a good team. Rahm Emanuel, of course, June Bonner had to come out immediately and say, oh, this is the wrong choice. He's not going to be able to unify America because this is a partisan. Well, you know, the White House chief of staff, his job doesn't have anything to do with setting the course of the administration. It has everything to do with keeping Congress in line. And in this particular case, Democrats are in charge of Congress, and you know how Democrats can be. We have certain behavioral tendencies when we get in large groups. And I believe that Rahm Emanuel is the right choice because he has got to have that laser-like focus to keep Congress disciplined. The Democrats in Congress.
Well, and then the chief of one of the primary jobs of the chief of staff is to get the president's agenda paid attention to and followed.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, he's kind of and he comes from that position under Nancy Pelosi to the certain, I mean, he was her enforcer. And I don't know what you get him operating in an Obama administration versus him operating for Pelosi. I think one of the big raps on him is that he is so thoroughly blue dog.
Yes.
And as you know, I think my job is to be as liberal as I can possibly be. And so the blue dogs do piss me off.
Well, that's what they're good for.
Yeah, more war now. Yeah. But well, if I don't entirely agree, I certainly understand.
Yes. And you know, looking at the transition, you know, I'm seeing, as I'm reading all of this, I see that the president, I can't wait till I can say the word Bush without thinking of that word. The president is now being hailed because he's going to have the smoothest presidential transition ever. He's been cooperating with the campaigns, and now this.
And you know what I say to that, Matt?
Let me say what I'm going to say first.
Okay, please go ahead.
I think that this is all part of his exit strategy for Washington D.C. I think it's all about getting the hell out of Washington D.C. and back to Crawford, Texas, as quickly as possible, so he can go back there and replenish the old coffers. That's what I think it's all about. It's a handoff of power. It's passing the baton early. It's saying, I'm going to take a nice early Christmas vacation to Crawford, Texas. I'm going to zing back to D.C. to hand over the keys on the 20th of January, and then I'm back to replenishing the coffers. It's an exit strategy. I don't think that he's looking
out for his country. I'll buy into that, Matt, but the other thing is I also think it's an outright lie. They ain't going to cooperate with nothing.
I think so.
Oh, look at the, we're the reality-based community, remember? Look at the computer system that Obama's going to inherit. I mean, I'm a little bit of a low-rent computer geek just because of what we do here. Ben Birch forgets more in any given minute than I'll ever know. Same thing with Peter Godbold. But the fact is, they've done that. Jesus, they called in the geek squad from Best Buy to work on the computers, Matt.
The geek squad from Best Buy.
I'm not kidding. And Barack Obama's going to have to have it. I don't know who his secretary of the internet's going to be, or whatever you call the guy who runs the. But he's going to walk into that room and go, holy crap! And he's going to, I don't know, he'll pull the top off of a server and there'll be like mice in there gnawing on the wires. I promise you. You know, I've said before they made that big stink, which turned out to be a big old lie, about how, you know, the Clinton staffers took all the W's off the keyboards. Damn, the Bush administration will take the keyboards.
And I'll tell you something else. You're talking about computer systems. Let's remember back to 1993, January 21st, when Bill Clinton had a press conference and he said, I was shocked to arrive in the Oval Office yesterday and discover that I could not have a conference call. They did not have the hardware. And we're talking about 40-year-old technology now, okay? They did not have the hardware to do a conference call in the Oval Office in 1993. That's 12 years of Republican presidents. That's what that will do for you.
Yeah, and with George Bush, the printers are all going to be dot matrix.
Probably. Yeah, probably, or else they're going to be those big, gigantic, bulky things. But my question is, are they going to do a forensic examination of the man-sized safe in Dick Cheney's office?
Yeah, and if they don't open it up and Geraldo Rivera's in there, I'm going to be very disappointed.
That's what we need. We need it live on camera. We need a camera.
I hate to even use this analogy. But everything in the White House is going to be booby trapped.
Whether it's sharpened about mountaintop removal and regulations that they're trying to put in at the last minute, I think they're going to leave landmines throughout the bureaucracy.
Well, they've already planted them. Some of them in human form, because as we've noted on a number of occasions, to the extent that the executive branch could have anything to do with hiring, executive branch civil service jobs have been filled routinely and regularly with these hardcore right-wing, government-hating, anti-American, ideological freaks from Patrick Henry University and Regent School of Law and Jerry Falwell Mail in the Matchbook School of Law. That crowd. They're all over the
amazing.
Place. It's gonna be like fumigating for cockroaches when he gets in there. But see, a lot of these little sleaze buckets have GS status and they're civil servants and they're not just political appointees, so you can't just get out. So they're gonna have to be found, and the minute they get caught showing their little wing nuttery, they're going to have to be isolated.
See, that's another reason why the chief of staff has got to be, frankly, kind of an ass. You've got to have somebody who is willing to play hatchet man, because you've got all these people who are going to be working for the executive branch, and frankly, they've got to be, you know, it's kind of like that old saw about when J. Edgar Hoover died, and within a year, there was something like 75% turnover at the FBI. You know, they just cleaned out the FBI, and they needed to. And over the course of 10 years, it's something like 100%, I think. It was close to 100% turnover in the FBI. They got rid of all these old guys or stuck them out the pasture or something like that to get rid of them.
And what you do with them, because you can't just fire them because they're civil servants, you reassign them.
You have to reassign them. You have to put them out the pasture.
Yeah. Hello, little Rhonda Right Wing. You're doing a great job. You're doing such a good job that we're going to move you over to the Department of Paper Napkins. And you're going to be in charge of ordering paper napkins for the next 40 years. Well, Matt, it's good to hear from you, and I'm glad it did come out right in the Battle of Two Parkers down there. Any more?
I got one more thing I got to tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen the map of how the nation shifted Democratic?
Yes.
If your listeners haven't, they should go to my website, take a look at this. Blue shift. It's amazing. You know how the universe is expanding and everything in the universe has reddish light to it?
Yeah, the red shift.
It's all going away from us. Well, everything's drawing together in the United States. Blue shift. It's an amazing picture.
Now, is this at Osborne Inc.?
Send it over there. OsborneInc.com.
Everybody.
OsborneInc.
Everybody go look. All right. Well, Matt, thanks a lot, and looking forward to the next poetic installment, too.
Okay. You have a great one.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye, Bob.
That's our buddy Matt Osborne down in North Alabama, osborneink.com. Yeah, go look at the blue shift. And I tell you what, I got a couple of callers left. I'm going to take them until we'll just stay on the air until we got all the callers done. Oh, that one's gone. Darn. Hey, welcome to the program.
Me again.
Hey, Dave, what's up?
Just listening, you know. I keep thinking I'm going to leave you alone, and then I put you on the radio, and then people start saying things, and my head starts to go, and I have to phone in.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Well, yeah, been sitting here kind of listening for quite a while. And, you know, all the environmental stuff, this is really my kind of big thing. I can get really kind of off on a rant, shall we say, with this stuff. I mean, I recently read a book about Libby in Montana, the asbestos book, and I don't know if you've run across anything about that.
I don't think so.
I think the book's called Fatal Deception or something like that. I can't remember. It's about a town called Libby in Montana and about the asbestos.
Oh, okay. It's coming back. That's another place that was poisoned to death by W.R. Grace and Company.
Basically, yes. And then kind of that leads on to another subject, and nothing to do with theories around what actually happened, but 9/11. I have to say that regarding the 12th rather than the 11th, when people were told it was safe to go back, based on the amount of asbestos courtesy of Libby, it's probably going to kill 10 times as many people as the event itself did.
I think that's doubtless. Well, if you recall, that's when Christy Todd Whitman, who was a diehard, rock-ribbed Republican, she was Secretary of Bush, she was Bush's EPA chief.
Yes.
That's when she put her hands up and said, oh, no, I'm out of here. Not going to play this game anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that shows how much the Bush government cares about the American people. Right there. In your face, pal.
Yeah.
For me.
And then the Bush administration trying to withhold funds that were there for workers' compensation.
Oh, yep.
You know, Dave, you point these things out. We may be 100 years, and this sort of dovetails with what Matt was talking about a minute ago, too. We may be 100 years sorting out the evil that this little 2-bit Texan low rent monster has done in 8 short years.
Yes, but I mean there's been a big lead up to it. I mean if you look at the history of corporations.
Oh gosh, yes. I mean you know going back to the early 70s, there was a brilliant book called The Sovereign State of ITT.
Yeah.
And I remember reading that in college.
I remember my dad was a union guy in England. And I remember him saying to me when I was young, you know, corporations have no regard for anything but themselves, and they cross country boundaries, and they use the laws in different countries to suit themselves, and that's all they care about. And I was brought up with that, you know. So I'm probably quite a way to the left, me thinks.
Well, you remind me of something that my daddy once told me. Of course, he was a child of the Depression. He would have been 84 just a few days ago. And
unfortunately, mine is still around. He's 85.
Treasure him. Treasure him, Dave.
I do.
And listen to every word. Hang on it.
They are wise people.
Well, I wish there was some way that I could just have a record to remind me of stuff that I'm sure I'll forget and won't pass to the next generation. But one of the stories he used to tell me was that you know when he was a young man, a high schooler before the Second World War started for us, I recognize that it was 2 years in by the time we got to it.
Broke out on my dad's 60th birthday.
Yeah. that's no present. But when they were just teenagers and before the United States entered the war, he and his best buddy would get a hold of a bottle of something not necessarily legitimate, and slip down the tracks to the river to the telegraph shack by the railroad, and that was high fun. And sit there and pass the night and pass the bottle with the telegraph operator for the CNO Railroad. And at one point, my dad told me the story. At one point, the fellow looked at him, at him and his buddy, and said, "Boys, you reckon if the CNO Railroad had a machine that would replace me, you reckon they'd install it?" And my dad and his buddy, who were horrified at the fact that they wouldn't have anywhere to go at 12 midnight anymore, said, "Well, shoot, no." And he said, "Boys, you're right. They'd wait till they had a machine that could replace me and every other telegraph operator on the line, and then they'd install it."
Yeah. Yep.
And that, you know, that stayed with my dad to the point that, you know, he was telling me that story when I was a full-grown man.
Yeah.
And he said, "I've seen it happen."
But here's an interesting thing. That I've always thought, just, you know, been throwing some logic at this thing. If, say, every worker in the world was replaced by a robot, who'd buy the stuff because no one would have any money?
And, well, that's the Walmart argument, too, Dave. If every American worker is replaced by somebody, some slave chained to a table in China,
yeah,
how are we going to buy the stuff that the Chinese slaves make?
Exactly. While I've been listening tonight, because... You know, my head goes off on terrible tangents sometimes. So while I've been listening, I've been kind of typing notes in on a little page here so that I could sit here and kind of hold it all together and make some sense rather than just rambling. And, you know, this kind of stuff, one of the things is that people have to be paid enough to buy what they make. Because if they're not, who the hell's going to buy it?
Well, for heaven's sakes, Henry Ford recognized that, and he was a monster.
Once there's no cheap labor left in the world because China's developed, India's developed, then at that point you've got nowhere to go other than pay people enough to buy what they make. So it's only a matter of time. So why not just do it now? You know?
I agree. But what the corporatists will do is, I think they take a different view of it than you, because what they think they can do, Dave, is they can depress, they can continue to depress wages around the world, so that about the same time that the Americans can't afford to build the buy the Chinese slave goods anymore, they'll bring the jobs back to America, and it'll be Americans chained to tables, and we'll be making stuff for the Chinese middle class.
Exactly. So what people have to realize, one of the things that I'm really hoping about what's just happened down your way, is that people will now realize that if enough of them jump up and down, they can get stuff done. Because that's really what it's shown. And I was looking tonight on the news about the Proposition 8 thing.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of people out on the streets about that. And I think if people realize that getting out on the streets, I mean, I've been out on the streets a time or five or six. I've been thrown out of Downing Street down in London three times in my life, for various reasons. I've always tried to get out there and do something, or if I'm not out there doing something, I'm trying to wake people up, you know. Just, if I wake two up, and they wake two up, and they wake two up, woohoo, we're off.
And suddenly you've got the closing scene from V for Vendetta. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. You know, but there's so much. I mean, like I said, I'll just read my list while I was going tonight. While I've been listening. Libby, 9/11, and then I got onto Monsanto and GM and suicide seeds, so that you're tired.
Frankenfood, yeah.
Yeah, clean coal, which is a total myth. And carbon sequestration stuff. What the hell's that?
Carbon sequestration is a part.
Here's for that. Trees.
Yes. You know? Yes. That is how the planet sequesters its carbon.
And the thing is that coal, what you do with coal is you're taking the Earth's carbon sequestration from a few hundred million years ago and digging it up again and putting it back in the air. What the hell is that?
I know. You're
digging up the Earth's control mechanism from the past.
Well, yeah, I mean, for instance, there's...
You need to deal with it doubly now.
There's the BS phony pseudoscience of, well, we'll just dig a big hole and we'll pump all the CO2 gas into the hole, and that's how we'll sequester the carbon. Meanwhile,
they get a little earthquake and all that carbon dioxide escapes suddenly, and woohoo, great, what's that going to do?
Yeah, Mom, Dad, I can't breathe. Well, that's okay, you can't either. I know. Meanwhile, it's one of the oldest philosophical rubrics in the world, Dave. If a tree falls in the forest and no one is watching, but this time we end it a different way, does it still sequester carbon? Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. You know, and this is the thing, you know, there's so much stuff, there's so much to say. You know, I mean, I'm partway down there. Let's go to nuclear waste. I mean, no, there's not been, has there been an ounce of nuclear waste permanently disposed of yet?
No.
Planet? I don't think so. And they're proposing to make more of the stuff? Well, where's the sense in that? In England, I remember, again, back in the 60s, talking about, you know, nuclear power, the big lie, that, you know, electricity would be so cheap, no one would even bother to meter it anymore because of nuclear power. That was the sell back then. And the thing was that, yeah, okay, fine, it puts out a lot of energy, but the cost of decommissioning all this stuff was never put into the equation. And it never has been seriously looked at, the cost of decommissioning a nuclear power station. It's not frightening. It's completely unknown. Nobody's done it yet.
Yeah, because, well, I know I grew up, Dave, near one that was known at the time and was, until the Soviets built a bigger one, it was the largest civilian nuclear reactor in the world for a while. Browns Ferry Nuclear Plant, run by the Tennessee Valley Authority, in northwest Alabama. And, you know, that thing's outlived its usefulness, by a factor of a couple of decades now. But what they did is they went in and they retooled the damn thing. But then they found out something really interesting, in the past couple of summers. Because, you know, it sits hard by the Tennessee River. And that's part of the cooling.
There's Oak Ridge down there, which is a really nice part of the world, I think.
But here's the fun part. It turns out that reactor cannot be operated safely if the river water rises above a very narrow window of temperature. And so if you have a brutally bad summer, sorry, reactor don't work no more.
Yep. But will you find out before it melts down or after?
Well, but Browns Ferry has its own set of fun. We almost had a Chernobyl in northwest Alabama a couple of decades back when a couple of the wiseacres were supposedly doing maintenance and safety checks, and so they were looking for gas leaks.
That's usually when it happens.
Yeah, this is the fun part. They were looking for gas leaks in lines. Dave, they were doing it with a candle.
Mm-hmm.
And they found one.
I have a story about that, but I'm not going to bore you with it. I'm just going to chuckle to myself.
Well, it's not boring at all, but I do have to roll along. I wanted to make sure that we cleared all the calls in the queue, and I'm sorry I came to you last this evening. But I don't have much power over things, but I love our conversations.
Well, you know, the last of me, you know that.
No, I hope not.
No, like I say, I just get on, I put you on, and I think, yeah, I'm not going to phone in tonight. And then, you know.
Then you kind of got to.
About ideas, you know, ideas.
Now we don't have any quotas here. I mean, the only quota we have as far as this program is concerned is be part of the conversation.
And bandwidth, I guess.
Nah, bandwidth's not even a problem.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, we've got just sitting here, we have the capability of dealing with tens of thousands of listeners per night. We haven't gotten there yet.
Hopefully, one day you get overloaded.
Looking forward to that, sort of.
Anyway, you have a good night.
All right, you take care, Dave. Always good hearing from you, my friend.
And enjoy life.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Good night.
That's our new buddy, Dave. Love hearing from him. Love hearing from all of you. I can't reinforce what a special thing this, what a special privilege and honor it is for me, for us. Stuff I learn, things I hear, the way, you know, the little maybe 45-degree turn of the Rubik's Cube, where everything looks different. And for that, I owe you immensely. Thank you all very, very much. We'll be back tomorrow evening with more conversation, more cussing and discussing. Thank you to those of you who stand with us and financially support the Head On Radio Network. I can't express again how humbling that is. Thank you for your efforts, your continued efforts. It would be beautiful if more people joined in that effort. I won't hesitate to say that. October was mighty rough. November looking rougher. Thanks to those of you who have contributed. We received a $15 contribution today and a $50 contribution. And they all add up to mean that the horn happens for another month. Thank you to everyone who makes the horn work, the moderators in the chat room, the bloggers, the news ninjas, all the hosts, you who have emailed, everyone. Listening podcast, listening live. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your cat. Give your computer a cat and log into the stream. That's one more body listening. This is just amazing. I was glad to hear from Rory this evening because I love letting you hear from the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch to know that the work continues, that the work is tireless, that the work is persistent and dedicated. Rory is a big part of that, just like everybody else in that office. And when I was given the list earlier, if I left anybody off, I apologize. It was not deliberate. But they do. They really, really do stand there in the face of a hell of a lot of opposition with little more than grit and determination. And it's a level of bravery and dedication that is seldom seen. And when you do see it, you count yourself among the blessed. Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coldriverwind.org. Thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Ben Burch really, really is not, I am not kidding, the hardest working man in liberal talk and the most overworked. And he has maintained since 2002, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and he too needs your support. You know, it's just that way. We don't stop the conversation so that we can advertise hemorrhoid cream or vacuum cleaners. Now, the downside of that is that we don't have any hemorrhoid cream makers to buy advertising or vacuum cleaner makers, because we think your time is more valuable than that. And that's why things like WhiteRoseSociety.org, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and TheGuyJamesShow.com are all self-supported insofar as your contributions make it possible for those organizations to go forward. By self-supporting, I mean yourself supports them. We'll do the work. It just has to be made possible. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.